May the college meeting to order, we're all going to stand for the pledge of the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First on the agenda tonight, we're going to have a public hearing. Prior to the consideration of the regular agenda items, City Council will conduct a public hearing to receive comment concerning a request from Cole. First, we're going to call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Ms. Queeta.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Cologne.
President Cologne will not be joining us this evening. The mayor is at something with the Cub Scouts, and he will be joining us when he can. Prior to the consideration of the regular agenda items, City Council will conduct a public hearing to receive comment concerning a request from Cole Ciliatis, Lawrence and Rashudi LLC, representing BPG Investments LLC, requesting an amendment to the city's zoning map by changing the zoning district of 11-15 West Garrison Street from high-density residential to central business. This privately proposed rezoning request is related to the proposed development of a 70-unit apartment building with commercial retail space on the first floor. This public hearing is for informational purposes only. There will be no vote during the public hearing. In connection with this public hearing, there are two communications. The clerk will read communication 6A.
February 14th, 2025, memorandum from Assistant Planning and Zoning Director Craig Piper outlining the City Planning Commission's review of the zoning map amendment proposed for 11 and 15 West Garrison Street. Mr. Piper reported that the Planning Commission voted 5-0 to recommend approval of this amendment.
Clerk will read communication 6B.
February 12, 2025, correspondence from Jill Seitz, Chief Community and Regional Planner with the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Ms. Seitz assessed that the rezoning proposal to build 70 apartments and additional commercial or retail space at 1115 West Garrison Street aligns with the LVPC's future LV, the regional plan, by facilitating mixed-use infill opportunities in areas where additional development can be accommodated.
This public hearing is called to order. I will now accept public comment, starting from my right. Does anyone have public comment regarding the hearing? To the center, does anybody have comment regarding the hearing? Mr. Shaw.
Bill Sawyer, 1898 Devon. I rise in opposition and to the rezoning. Two reasons. First of all, I'm not a lawyer, I'm an economist, but my understanding is that this would be what's called spot zoning. And spot zoning, I'm told, is illegal. And I can give you an example. The supermarket at Linden and Johnson Drive, I think it's called Azar now, they've gotten variances over the years, over decades. And I made the argument one night that if all these variances had been done at one time, it would have amounted to a rezoning. And that would have been spot zoning, which is illegal. And Attorney Blackenstall, who was representing the neighbors, approached me afterwards and said, that was a great argument, which means to me that that property, then given the size that it has, would have been spot zoning. On Garrison Street, we're talking about something a lot smaller. So I do think that if you override the on this, well, actually, it's not a question of overriding. It's if you approve this, it's going to end up in the courts, and they're going to lose. So it would be a waste of time. Secondly, this, of course, is desired in order to augment the large, much larger project on Center Street. And that is a problem we got, we need to do something about. What happened, and this was while I was working in D.C., well, you remember my remark about urban renewal, when Gordy Maurer told me his biggest mistake as mayor was urban renewal. Well, there was something similar to urban renewal when a large residential section was rezoned from residential to commercial business district. And my memory is a little fuzzy on this, but it's roughly the center on the east and Main Street on the west, right up to Union Boulevard. Now, some of it got rezoned back to residential, but not all of it. And in particular, not this block. A huge mistake, because what was happened there was a residential area was converted to a commercial business district where there was no height limit. Talk about a drastic or destroying the city in order to save it. The proposed building there on Center Street strikes me as about 8 stories. It's like the one on South New, which is 9 stories. The same problem, you take a commercial property and build apartments where the height limit is greater than any residential district in the city. The most intense, dense residential is RT, and the limit on apartment buildings is 3.5 stories. Now you have the same syndrome at Hanover Apartments, which is zoned limit to commercial. And they think they can build apartments up to 5 stories because that's the height limit in limited commercial. So some of these developers are just seizing on commercial properties that have a greater height limit in order to build bigger apartment buildings. So we need more apartments. Do we really need more apartments in down there with a smaller parking garage? I rest my case.
Anybody else in the center have public comment regarding the hearing this evening? And anyone to the left? I would now recognize representatives of the zoning amendment petitioners to speak about the requested zoning map amendment.
Good evening. My name is Mike Rashudi. I'm with the law firm Paul Basilios Friends Rashudi on behalf of BPG Investments 2 and their petition for the rezoning of 11 and 15 West Garrison Street, changing them from RT to CB. This is a zoning map change request, so it's not a zoning change of the ordinance, just a change of the map. For the record, the property was posted from tonight's hearing on February 10th. So just a little bit about BPG Investments 2. It's a local group of investors. It's headed by Gabe and Drew Moyer over here tonight. They also own Bethlehem Property Group, which is a local property management company here in the city. The group owns several other properties in the north side downtown area. BPG Investments is planning to build a mixed-use apartment building in the 700 block of North New Street. The group owns 9 parcels currently between North Street and West Garrison Street and could build their proposed building on 7 of those parcels without the need for zoning relief or the zoning change we're seeking tonight. However, during their initial planning of this project, they determined that building on all 9 parcels would give them greater efficiency in using the site, provide more on-site parking, and just be a better project for the neighborhood, in their opinion. The petition for a zone would allow them to build on all 9 lots and would return the parcels at 11 and 15 West Garrison Street back to their pre-2005 zoning designation of CB. In a minute, Gabe Moyer is going to walk you through the presentation on the screen, and hard copies were passed out to each of you. And he's going to explain the difference between what they could build and what they want to build with the zoning change and why they think that's better. Now, just to remind you, this is just a conceptual plan at this point. We're not promising to build this building as is. Once the petition for rezoning is resolved, they'll work with their architect, Vince Marucci, who's also here tonight, in case there's any questions for him, their engineers and surveyors. They'll complete the appropriate land development and subdivision plan, which would be submitted to the city's planning department, go through a thorough review by the city under the SALDO, the zoning ordinances, and other city ordinances. So just want to make sure that we're clear that this is just conceptual, what they plan to build, what they can build, and it'll finally go through the land development process at that point. This is a little bit about the petitioner. They have and are continuing to work with the community, the city, and its neighbors to provide open and transparent communication during this process. This is why they've presented their whole plan, why they're going to do this walkthrough tonight with you guys, to show you what they want to build and their plan and their concept here, and why they think the zoning change makes it better. We've already made some modifications after an initial meeting with the city administration this past fall, and they've had discussions with the neighborhood and their neighbors and some neighborhood groups. We believe that this location and site are the right place for this kind of development due to its convenience to downtown, its access to public transportation. It's only a block away from the Lanthe station on Getter Street. And the site needs some redevelopment. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the site, but several years ago there was a large water main break and sinkhole on New Street in that section, and as such, a couple of the buildings on these parcels had to be raised. So there are some kind of missing teeth, as they say, in that block. So to redevelop it now, it makes sense to do something that encompasses those parcels and these other parcels. As noted before, this project is consistent with the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission's future LV regional plan, and was approved by the Bethlehem Planning Commission, or recommended by the Bethlehem Planning Commission meeting on Thursday by a vote of 5-0. And just to note, this is kind of a unique situation, and I'm not sure you'll ever see anything like this. My client procured this property from a owner who, and his estate actually, who spent about 30 years buying up these 9 parcels. So it's kind of unique in that situation that one guy spent most of his life buying parcels. He actually proposed a similar building to City Council back in 2019. The rezoning change did not go through at that time. But what I think you'll see here is something that you might not see again in the city. Is so unique that there's not one guy bought 9 parcels and wants to combine them to build this building. I'm not sure you're going to see that again. So just to point that out. And then so Gabe Moyer's going to walk you through the presentation, and we'll be available for any questions you have.
Going through the slides to make sure everyone around here can also see what's also in front of you. So my name is Gabe Moyer. I'm a principal with Bethlehem Property Group LLC. I'm here as the developer today, representing BPG Investments 2 LLC, which is the petitioner and the owner of the 9 contiguous parcels we're discussing tonight. We're here specifically to talk about 2 of those 9 parcels. That would be 11 and 15 West Garrison Street. We are seeking this rezoning because it will allow us to build a better building with lower average height, more parking, and just generally better appearance. So we have about 10 minutes or so of some slides. I'm gonna invite my architect up here as well, just to provide a little more background information with the goal of hopefully having council and those all here best come to a collective decision that works for the city of Bethlehem. So turning over to page 2, this is a site overview of the 9 parcels. So what you're looking at on the left-hand side are those 9 parcels. In blue, the blue outline would be 7 of them that are currently zoned commercial business. And then on the top right of that left diagram would be 11 and 15 West Garrison, outlined in green. Those are currently zoned high density residential, and that's what we are hoping to have rezoned because we think it'll help us make the more efficient building. On the right-hand side, you have a table which gives some details about the site and all nine properties. So if I just walk through that first row, 15 West Garrison is currently zoned RT, high density residential, but prior to 2005, it was zoned commercial business. It's about a little over 2,000 square feet in size, which represents about 6.9% of the whole site. It's important to note that all nine of these properties were zoned commercially for decades prior to 2005. It was really only this small piece, 11 and 15 West Garrison, that changed in 2005. And we're here petitioning to have those reverted back to commercial business to join the remaining parcels. Zooming out to page 3, to give the group a little bit more, get you oriented in terms of where we're discussing, where the site is located. This is the 700 block of North New Street in North Bethlehem. It's called out in that red box. And in that top image is a picture taken from the northern corner. And then the bottom image is taken from the southern corner. The Garrison Street properties would be located right behind that building in the top right image. One thing to note is there is lots of open space, as Attorney Ricciuti mentioned, and we think for that reason it is an ideal place to hopefully fill new residences. We're really here today because we want to provide transparency. We want to show what we intend to do with the site. We've developed multiple plans. We've been looking at the site for a very long time. We also knew the prior owner. Our architect, who will speak momentarily, has looked at multiple configurations as well. But we also want to gather feedback from everybody to hopefully come to the best decision as a group. So on page 4 is a side-by-side for what we're planning. And here are two conceptual images of what we're looking to do on the site. The image on the right is a 70-unit mixed-use building that is currently by right and allowed to be, and would utilize the 7 CB parcels, so there'd be that blue outline we looked at a moment ago. And then that image on the left is a 70-unit mixed-use building option that would require rezoning, and it would utilize all 9 parcels. Some of you on council might remember a rezoning petition that was brought back in 2019 for these same parcels. It's important to note that our plans are quite a bit different from what was proposed in 2019, and it does reflect feedback that we received from conversations with planning and zoning, the economic development department, and community members. And some of the adjustments made that are reflected in our recommended plan here today are we reduce the unit count and provide for a step down into the Garrison Street neighborhood, so that will provide for a better flow into the neighborhood. There's more parking in our recommended plan versus the prior plan, so hopefully reduce any parking demands on the local streets. We've also increased the number of 2-bedroom units versus 1-bedroom and studio units versus the prior plan. Our thought is that bigger units foster more housing permanency, and that will be more desired by who our target market is, which would be workers, small families, those that want to live downtown. We also recognize the need for sale units like condominiums at a starter home price point. So we're actually looking at this fairly closely, and this has come on the back of just the ongoing discussions we've had to learn about that in particular new living units, but in particular units that could be purchased and are in that starter home category. So with that, I'm actually going to invite our project architect Vince up here, and then I will come back just to make a couple closing comments after he spends a little time going through the differences between the two concepts.
Thank you, Gabe. Thank you for your time, Council. My name is Vince Marucci, principal architect at Entropy Consulting. I do have a bit of a long history with this project, most of which Mike gave. The previous owner, I did work for as an architect. I was very involved with the go-around in 2019. I did the renderings back then, the plans. I probably looked at this project 10 different ways. And I was there even when the sinkhole happened, rescued a cat from the one building, named it Sinkhole, which was a cute little thing. But anyhow, what we're looking at here, when I was engaged by the new owners, Bethlehem Property Group, the directive was, what can we build there on the seven parcels, central business? There wasn't much of an interest to go through the protracted process of zoning variances, rezoning, city council, and they knew they could get a building on those seven parcels. So looking at the alternative on slide five here, I redesigned the concept, and it becomes, if you see in the inset in the bottom left, becomes an L-shaped building. There's inherent inefficiencies with this layout, especially for the parking, but most notably, you'll see this is a taller building. They are able to go up on CB much more than this, but they're looking at 6 to 7 stories. The inefficiencies also lead to only 45 parking spaces, and the retail, neighborhood retail, comes down to about 5,320 square feet. Also, you'll notice the facades are a little bit different. Building code dictates construction types. Going taller necessitates a more costly construction type. So there is potential for value engineering the facade a little bit to account for those differences, but this retains the same number of units, just a taller building, and more inefficient. With the recommended, just adding those two small parcels to the contiguous central business zone, it really opens up the parking. So we nearly double the parking spaces at 85 and retain the same number of apartment units at 70. This is a 5 to 6 story building, the variation being on North Street, it's up higher, so it's 5 stories. As it drops down towards Garrison, it becomes 6. Just because of the grade change. So given that, they are also able to step back, and I think Gabe had mentioned this, step down the facade. And I'm gonna skip ahead a little bit to slide number 11, where it kind of gives the comparison of the facades. On the left is the recommended, and you can see how that the facade is, the building is lower and the facade steps down, whereas the by right building on the right, the taller building, you would have those 7 stories essentially abutting the lower RT district. So going back to this, we do see, the imagery that we saw before. It just fits better with the neighborhood, getting these two parcels to join the others. It really helps fit in the fabric of the street there. With that, I think I could turn it back to Gabe, and I'll wait any questions.
Regardless of which project we pursue, we think a new mixed-use development makes sense for this site in general, but also the city of Bethlehem more broadly. Some of those benefits you can see here, and those are on page 7 in your physical packet. The project will help meet the need for more housing. There's been a number of studies about this. I don't think that's news to anyone that's been listening to any of the council meetings over the past few years. And one study that particularly kind of stood out and comes to mind would be the recent Opening Doors study, where they mentioned nearly 1,000 units are needed in the city of Bethlehem to get us back to normal vacancy rate. So even though this is 70 units, not near that amount, it is a step in the right direction. Also, we continue to hear through our conversations the need for owner-occupied for-sale units, something like condominiums, which we are actively reviewing and really consider that's a possibility for this area as well, in this building. There's going to be significantly more tax revenue generated from having this building on this site as well. We estimate that there will be roughly $300,000 new tax revenue for the Beth Elam Area School District, just in terms of the order of magnitude, that's roughly 10 times what's generated on the site today, mainly because a good portion of it is just vacant property. In addition to that, a new building comes with safer streets. We'll be filling in those vacant lots, so the less potential for loitering. We'll be adding a new streetscape, things like new lighting, cameras. That all helps promote public safety. Additionally, just increased vibrancy overall. New residences, new storefronts, as I mentioned, new streetscape, clean sidewalks. We constantly hear about the desire of local businesses. We are pursuing a business ourselves on Broad Street. That additional foot traffic should be good for them, and we hope that new residents there will help promote that. Just to wrap up on the last page, would be page 8, is a side-by-side of the two buildings. If 11 and 15 West Garrison Street are rezoned, we can construct a more efficient building that incorporates community feedback for a lower building height, adequate parking, a seamless transition into the Garrison Street neighborhood, and a generally enhanced appearance that blends into the surrounding area. The rezoning 11 and 15 West Garrison Street doesn't necessarily mean a bigger building. It actually means a much better, more efficient building. So with that, thank you for your time and consideration, fellow Principal Drew, our architect Vince, and Attorney Rashudi and myself are all here and happy to take any questions.
Thank you. I will now recognize a representative from the administration to address this matter.
Good evening. My name is Craig Pfeiffer. I am the Assistant Planning Director for the city. You have a memo written by me in regards to the Planning Commission meeting that took place this past Thursday. The Planning Commission did vote 5-0 to recommend approval to Council on this request. In that packet also includes the memo written by not only myself, but the members of the administration, including reviews and comments from our mayor. So therefore, it is an accurate reflection that the Planning Bureau also recommended the approval to the Planning Commission. Without me going through that entire memo, just to make a few points that I heard from the applicants, this is a very unique location. This is a very unique opportunity where you see 9 parcels coupled together over about 30 years. And to stress that it's important to think about these things more in terms of height, massing, and scale, and that this project is just about the zoning map amendment for tonight, and this will still go through an entire land development review. We get given more feedback from not only the city planning staff, but also the bureaus, and then subsequently to the Planning Commission, where the public will also be invited to make more comments. And with that, I'll take any questions that you might have.
Thank you. I will now recognize members of council for comment. Anybody can I look at it? Councilor Callan?
Ms. Pfeiffer, so as it is right now, they are allowed, without any city council moving at all, they're allowed to put how high of a building up there? What is it currently zoned?
The 7 parcels are zoned CB, and the max height in that is 150 feet.
Which is what, like 10 stories?
Depending on the floor-to-floor heights, it could go up to about 12 to 14 stories.
Okay, and so where's the parking going out? Is it under? Is this whole building up on stilts? So all the parking is underneath?
Yes. Essentially, the parking is on the lower two levels. With the grade change down to Garrison, you would have an entry on Garrison to a lower level parking. And I'm going to switch to. These don't really tell much of the story. But then on North Street, there would be a second level. They're both ground level, just two different levels because of the change in grade.
So if you put 70 units in there at the 1.5 multiplier, where's the rest of the parking?
In Central Business District, there's no parking requirement. Right. But just to make them more leasable, it is desirable to have the parking, which is, and also discussions with the neighborhood, even back in 2019, the parking was a concern, so that is part of the reason initially to put the parking in.
So there's definitely going to be overflow into the parking garage that's on the street.
I can't speak to that, but, you know, it's possible, I suppose.
Mr. Callahan, there's 85 spots. I'm not sure if you saw.
Yeah.
So this is the Appendix A with the parking comparison. So on the recommended building, there's 85 parking spots, and there's going to be 70 units. So
Mr. Piper, with or without any movement from the city, they're permitted to build the alternative, what they're calling the alternative design.
By right, that is correct.
Right, okay.
Any other questions?
So I just want to confirm that the structures, that if the zoning map change was, you know, goes through, that the spots on Garrison Street, those properties that would come down, they're actually going to be replaced with parking, not apartments, right? That's an area where you're going to have the first level parking, right?
Probably the best image would be to look at this. It'd be partially residences, partially where cars would enter the parking.
When I was looking at the big ones over the weekend, I noticed that it was principally parking, though, for the most part. I actually had a couple of questions about the buildings that are presently on the on Garrison Street, I'm just wondering. I believe there are two units in one of the buildings and one unit in the other. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes. And so, are they currently occupied? Are they currently rented?
11 West Garrison is currently rented. 15 West Garrison is currently not. It's in. It's presently vacant.
Okay. And so, what's the rent at 11 West, and what are the specs on that property?
So there are two units there. I believe it's a one bedroom and a two bedroom unit. And I want to say we're in the context of. I want to say it's about 1,500 for a one bedroom or 1,600 for a one bedroom, and then the two bedroom is around 1,700.
Are they up to date? The buildings are a bit old. Are those updated with, updated?
Yes, we did some renovation work a little while back now, so I consider them pretty up to date.
Oh, thank you. So I understood from the architect that, going taller creates obviously more costs because of the code, and so you do some value engineering. Is that why the balconies come off in the alternative design?
That's part of the reason, yes.
And this is more of a comment than a question. As you said, in the CB, there's no parking minimum. I don't have a problem with having less parking with this building. That may sound controversial to some folks, but it's a certain perspective that I have in terms of dense residential and commercial. The other thing is the difference being the 8,350 square feet of commercial retail versus 5,320. Have you done a feasibility study to indicate that there's actually enough small businesses that are clamoring for commercial space? Are these going to be large commercial spaces that the rent is going to be difficult for small businesses to make? Because to me, I'm just wondering if we need that much new commercial retail when we have a fairly decent amount of. I was just driving through the neighborhood the other day and saw a number of empty storefronts. So if you could just speak to that part of it.
Sure. We think there is a need. I think the what I would primarily point to is I believe there was a Gibbs Planning Group study that actually was more focused on the Northside Historic District, but it's not far away at all. And in that study, they call out the need for a significant amount of more commercial square footage to accommodate additional stores. So I would point to that, and one of the reasons why we think it makes sense to have more than 5,300 square feet and actually bring 8,300 square feet. In addition, it wouldn't be one single space. I'd imagine that probably gets sized in maybe five different units or so. And we actually own a couple other properties that have spaces of similar size, and they tend to rent pretty quickly and pretty fast. So I obviously, we've seen a lot of growth in the city of Bethlehem. I at least in my professional experience, and just through some of the studies I've seen that I think are pretty recent, would think that there'd be good uptake for the commercial units.
So you're thinking like less than 2,000 square foot spaces?
Sorry, and maybe just one more comment. I guess the commercial space is required by the zoning code.
Yeah, I'm not disputing that, obviously. It's CB.
Sure. And then I'm sorry, I missed your second.
So you're thinking they would be less than 2,000 square feet each. So we're not talking about big cavernous spaces that.
I agree. That's what we would target.
Okay. Yep. That's helpful to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that thorough presentation, everyone. I just have a couple questions. For the building, the larger building that is on the corner of New and North, what is that right now? Is that all residential? Is it residential and retail?
It's a mix of residential and it's actually commercial office space.
Okay. How many residential units are in that building?
Two.
Okay. And it's currently occupied?
They are.
Okay. The other question I have is regarding the parking. One concern I have is, well, North Street is wider and Garrison is very narrow, and so have you taken into account that the parking entrance and exit is going to be on Garrison? And I'm concerned about that as far as the narrowness of that street and the fact that there's other homes on that street with, you know, parking right on the street.
Maybe I can invite my architect up, who's done a little more.
I just wanted to comment. So, yeah, as you mentioned, New Street is plenty big. Garrison, we would be pulling some cars off the street as far as parking goes, but also going through land development, there would be a thorough traffic study done. And that's typically when they would recommend infrastructure improvements, you know, and changing, if need be, change that intersection. I can't really speak to what that would be, but once the traffic planning gets in there, they will recommend any improvements that would need to be made for the traffic studies.
Okay. So just to clarify, so when you say you would be taking some parking spots off the street, that would be for people that are living there now?
Well, currently, some of the tenants have street parking there. They can speak to it for sure, but those apartments on Garrison, I don't believe, have off-street parking currently.
So we could lose some street parking. It sounds
Again, that would come out during land development. It would be whatever the city engineers would recommend is what they would be on the hook for.
Okay. The one question I had, and I'm not sure if this is for the city, is the fact that there was a sinkhole there previously, and it was attributed to a water main break. But I just wanted the city or the architect, as far as the safety of building, given that there was a previous sinkhole, has that all been, I'm sure, thoroughly researched?
Maybe I can just make a quick comment on that. The history there was, it's tough to characterize it as a sinkhole, because what happened previously is there was a water main leak underneath North New Street that kind of eroded some of the land underneath the properties, and that unfortunately caused the properties to sag and had to be condemned and torn down. That has since been rectified, but the parcels remain there vacant. When we continue on with the land development process and begin to do surveys and geotechnical analysis and those type of things, where we actually start to analyze the land, if there are anything we come across that we can remediate at that time, which we would intend to do. So that would be the process to kind of address any concerns if they were to arise, but we're not aware of any today.
Okay, thank you. And my last question, I think maybe it would be for Mr. Pfeiffer, I'm not sure, but I'm just wondering about, I know we keep saying there's a need for residences, and we just keep, seems like it's apartments, which, you know, certainly is good for many people, but I'm wondering about the vacancy and occupancy rate of apartments. I'm not sure if that would be you or Ms. Collins. For example, like, do we know the one that's closest is the new Boyd development? Do we know what the occupancy or vacancy rate is there? I just want to get a handle on, you know, the need for more apartments in that area.
So with respect to individual buildings, I we don't necessarily have specific data, but anecdotally, you know, the Boyd has gotten certificates of occupancy gradually for various floors. The first two floors came first, and then they continued work on the higher floors. I believe currently they are on pace for what they expected, which is still, I think it's less than 50%, but I believe that is just because of the timing of the COs and getting residents in there. So I think my understanding is that they're comfortable with the pace that they are getting those apartments filled. And then just more broadly in terms of the need for residences, you know, in addition to our own study, the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission just rolled out their housing study as well, which is a really interesting tool that goes community by community, not just in Bethlehem, but, you know, the other cities, the suburbs, the townships. And they're projecting out not only the immediate need, but also the need over the next 50 years for, you know, new residences. And you can kind of toggle that by community. And you'll see if you look at Bethlehem based on their data, which is pretty comprehensive, that they are still projecting, you know, hundreds of units per year over the next 50 years.
And how many units are we looking at for where the Walnut Street garage will be rebuilt?
There are not plans for that one yet. I mean, the concept, I believe, it was probably around about 100, but again, they haven't actually, you know, fully designed that project yet or presented anything.
Okay. And then I know Martin Tower is, you know, at a standstill, but that was that 1,700 units?
No, the zoning that is currently on the Martin Tower site allows for 1,085 units.
1,085, okay, great.
So they're currently allowed by zoning.
All right, thank you. I think that's all I have. Thanks so much.
Bruce, may I just follow up one comment on the back of that? Our building or our plans are quite a bit different than the Boyd's at the moment. We intend to have a high percentage of two-bedroom units and much larger one-bedroom units versus... we think there's a particular need for those types of units versus what's been brought onto the market by some of the other projects that have recently come online. A lot more studios and one bedrooms in those.
Thank you. I think that's great. I like that you talked about thinking about owner-occupied, which is, I think, a real need in the city, maybe affordable also. Thank you.
Yeah, so could somebody speak to the public comment regarding spot zoning and whether this is, whether this isn't? I assume it is not, because that would be illegal, so I don't think we'd be standing here or sitting here today.
Yeah, this is a zoning map change, and it's an adjacent district, so it would not be spot zoning.
Because the neighboring and surrounding properties are already CB.
Correct.
Just wanted to make sure of that. Why were those parcels converted back to residential in 2005 if they were CB prior to that?
So that was a result of a couple of things. One was to change that zoning that has been historically commercial, going all the way back to the 1950s, from a commercial core, which allowed for a lot of different types of development, to focus that more on the downtown area. So that area got changed, and it got changed, not only was it not changed or changed off of CB, but it was changed back to residential in that area because of the more residential nature of the street and because those streets are considered local streets, whereas North New, having an 80-foot right-of-way, got the CB designation, and then further over on Union got the CL designation.
So it was sort of the same thing from the other direction of, oh, it's all residential over here, so let's extend the residential this way. Now we're shifting back a bit.
Correct.
Because it's on the edge. Okay. In terms of community outreach, you said you've had some meetings with neighbors and businesses in the area and whatnot. So can you just describe what sort of community outreach you've done and what feedback you've heard from community members, at least through what your understanding is?
Yeah, of course. We have good relations. First one would be our existing tenants. So we gave them notice months ago that we were even considering doing this change, and it's a reason just for gathering feedback. We live there as well. We live locally. So that was one. It's part of the reason why none of them have come here today to oppose it, because they also actually think it makes sense for the area. In addition to that, listened to numerous council meetings, were part of, heard the discussions from 2019, where there was some community feedback that happened at that time. And to summarize essentially what people saw at that time was the need for a better flow into the Garrison Street neighborhood, which we made those adjustments. Adequate parking, which is why we adjusted the plans to increase parking. And then also the need for more permanent type of units, which is why we adjusted the unit mix to have larger units. In addition to that, we've had a number of conversations with the Economic Development Department, with the city, planning and zoning, and in addition, touching base with representatives of the Northside Alive group, just to kind of gather comments and reflect that into our plans.
In terms of the permanency and attainability, and the fact that you have current tenants in some of these properties, would you be offering them dibs on new units and potentially, easing them into any rate increases or keeping their rent ideally, so that if they wanted to stay in their own neighborhood, they could?
We have great relations with our tenants. I would love if they all came and continue to reside in our building. We would absolutely make that offer to every single one of them. We do have a couple of small businesses there. We hope they take this new space. Actually, one in particular has been asking for more space constantly. This would be a great opportunity for that. So not only do we intend to provide ample lead time before any groundbreaking were to take place so they could find accommodations during the interim, but we'd hope to invite everyone back to live in the new residences as well.
And then I believe my last question is, on the 9 parcels that are there entirely, recognizing some of them are empty right now of structure, how many units are total on the 9 parcels right now?
15.
Okay, and how many of those 15 are occupied right now?
Of those 15, 14 of them are.
Thank you for your presentation. Most of my questions have been answered, but one of them was regarding the commercial space, and I'm glad to hear that you plan to divide it into smaller parcels like that. We have seen and continue to see in certain development properties in the city large, empty, cavernous storefronts that haven't been rented for years, and that almost regardless of what's happening above that, it doesn't matter how great that is, that's what people see on the ground, and that's not something we want to repeat, so thank you for that. Also, glad to hear about your conversations with neighbors. I admit I expected more public comment on the matter tonight, so I do believe that's an indication of the work that you've already done in the community, and it sounds like you're committed moving forward to having really intentional, thoughtful conversations with the neighbors, which I also appreciate. My remaining question, I guess, with regard to the potential owner-occupied, what are you currently thinking? Are you thinking a certain percentage would be condos? Where do you stand on that? On
that right now? And I know you're still thinking about it, but...
I would characterize it as they're both side by side in terms of the direction you could go, rental units or owner occupied. I think what's shifted is just our dialogue that we've had over the past in anticipation of this meeting and doing some more research. It's continuously come up things like condos, so it's really brought that into the fold as something that we want to keep digging into and pursuing. We've done some preliminary work in terms of the ability to do that on this site. It seems like the unit wouldn't really change much whether they become apartments or condos, so it's something we'd love to offer, and it kind of sounds like there's a good amount of demand for it. So we're looking at it very, very closely.
And that would be a decision that you would be making for the entire building or certain units?
It'd probably be for the entire building, okay. But we would look at maybe a mixed plan of sort. Have to get into that a little bit closer as we further along the plans.
Just curious about that. And then just one word that you were using with regard to the building that will exist if the zoning change does not take place versus the building that will exist if it does. You use the word efficient, the more efficient building, and maybe that's an industry term. I'm just curious to know, when you say that word, what do you mean? Do you mean more efficient to build, quicker, actual sustainability aspects to it? What do you mean when you say efficient?
Primarily the additional parking spaces you get and a lower building height. That would be, and then the other component would be more retail space. So we pick up retail space that can be roughly 8,300 square feet versus 5,300. We can lower the total size of the building, which is feedback that we've heard there's a desire for, and then we can offer significantly more parking. So the combination of all of it, and we think we'll be able to because the overall construction cost will be a bit cheaper, like Vince alluded to, we think we could put some of that money into our enhanced facade. So all together, this kind of park, that's why the word efficiency comes to mind.
So almost more user-friendly is how I'm interpreting what you're saying?
I would characterize it as incorporating what we've heard people want better.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Great card about speaking to us, as all my questions have been asked. I do also want to say I appreciate the idea of condos. I'm interested about the feasibility of that, and having seen Riverport, if those condos remain condos, like owner-occupied, as opposed to condos that then just ultimately become somebody's investment property. And I appreciate the smaller commercial footprint, like as Councilman spoke to earlier, these large cavernous commercial spaces tend to sit vacant for years, and it does not do well for our foot traffic. So smaller commercial opportunities for smaller businesses to really start up and grow at that time is something that's greatly appreciated. Sorry, Councilman Campbell.
I just have one extra question. If the zoning variance is denied, what's the plan for 11 and 15 West Harrison?
The 15 West Garrison in particular, it needs quite a bit of work. So I'm not quite sure exactly what the plan would be to that. That one is currently vacant. 11 West Garrison, I believe pretty soon those tenants will be on a month-to-month lease as well. So I think we would look at what to do with the two properties at that point to potentially offer some maybe some additional amenity space for this construction project if it were to go in. So we'd probably look to potentially tear them down.
There is a possibility of you knocking them down and turning it into a parking lot?
I believe there is. If we'd have to look exactly how zoning is, but yes.
Any other questions from council? So we have had our presentation and council has had a chance to speak, so I'm going to open it back up for public comment. So thank you very much. starting on my right again. Is there anyone who wants to make public comment regarding the hearing? Anyone in the center? Yes, you do. You have to. Sorry, I know we have quite a few new people, and also I'm not used to this. So, two public comments. Here it is. So, when you come up to public comment, just please say your name and address the chair.
Oh, thank you very much. Good evening. My name is Bishop. I'm from Lehigh. Actually, just leave off Wyandotte Street. So, I have little context of the conversation, but I just had a curiosity. The architect was talking about the inefficiencies of the alternative building. I was wondering if he could speak to maybe, if we were to construct the alternative model, what inefficiencies does it introduce to the space around it? Such that my question is it possible that building the alternative design introduces such an alternative that if we were to go ahead with it, we could just go ahead with the recommended design? Basically, my question is, the alternative design with its inefficiency, would it introduce so much of an inefficiency to the surrounding space that it would just make sense to go with the recommended design? Thank you.
Thank you for your question. I'm going to turn to y'all and ask you guys if you want to engage with these comments, or would you rather conclude the hearing and address them outside?
To answer the question, as I understood it anyhow, maybe I should reiterate. So you're saying the alternative design would create such inefficiency for the space around it as well? Is that, if I'm understanding that correctly, the answer is yes. And back to the point of, can those areas be knocked down and be parking? The fact is, it does leave a sliver of property that is also inefficient at its core as well. I don't know if that answers, but I'm happy to address any others.
Thank you. And in public comment, just for those that are not used to the meeting structure, it's a time for you to engage with council. We do not go back and forth with questions and answers, but you can address anybody in the hallway after we have a whole bunch of people who are willing to talk to you. So anyone within the
I'm Scott Parkinson. Honestly, I came here because my friend asked me to come, and I just wanted to see what was going on. But much to my surprise, I was a tenant of 700 Block twice and lived in the raised apartment, so this is kind of an interesting subject to come up. I will say this, although I totally support better continuous growth, one of the things I did see was the crack that went down, Garrison. So I'd be interested to hear about, Mr. Moyer here gave an answer about the integrity of the ground, because what I saw was pretty rough. At the time, the code inspector's name was Craig. I can't remember his last name. It was a long time ago, and very fraught. But I do know that they weren't able to build upon that. Now, I'm sure that from an infrastructure perspective in modern times, you are able to fix that stuff, but I'm kind of fascinated as to how much we know about that problem, because at the time it was explained to me, and probably improperly, by the terms of the city. He was very blunt with me, and it seemed to be a problem. So I'm interested to hear what these geothermal studies they did and what they came up with to know exactly what the issue is in terms of such a large project.
Anyone in the broad center have
questions regarding the hearing? He referred to me. I just have a question. If there's 70 apartments and only 85 spaces plus commercial, what's the breakdown of studio, one bedroom, two bedroom units? And if there's two drivers in more than those that take up those spots, where's the rest of the parking going to go if you're off, if you're taking off-street parking away from the residents that currently live there? I don't think that was addressed.
Thank you. Mr. Shire?
Sorry. Mary Jo McCool.
Mr. Shire?
Well, a few more comments, Bill Shire. Not being an attorney, I'll concede to Attorney Ricciuti that legally it may not be spot zoning because it's would be the same zoning as the adjacent property. But in the planning sense, it's spot zoning. This has been a dormant problem sitting there. When Bill Fitzpatrick was, I understand, was a fellow to get part of this CB area back to residential, but he now lives around the corner from me in West Bethlehem. He was president of the zoning hearing board, as you may know. As for the people who don't come, there's a syndrome in this city, and it's not just confined to this neighborhood. People in this city are not active enough in their city affairs. My next door neighbors are an example. Oh, we're too busy to go to meetings. Or it doesn't make any point. They're not going to listen to us anyway. One guy in the next block came down to a couple of meetings, felt that he would just ignore it, never came back. It's a real problem in this city, which I feel very strongly because of my working years in D.C., where it's the other extreme. The residents of D.C., they work for the government, or they work for lobbying firms, or they work for trade organizations. And they're used to dealing with government, and it doesn't awe them at all. And it's a city that has maybe 10 times the population at most. I'd say more like 8 times. But it has 50 neighborhood organizations combined into 2 federations. Plus, there's the Committee of 100 on the federal city. I understand from the chief that there's really only one. Well, I shouldn't quote her, but there's only a few block watches still operating in this city, and it's our substitute for involvement. So it's up to people like me. In the previous council, we were known as the STP, the same 10 people, who feel a commitment to the city to speak out on these issues. So I'm going to speak out, and I'm going to keep on speaking out. This property, and I sort of blame myself for not doing anything about this, but there's been a lot of other things to deal with. This CB never should have happened in the first place. Bill Fitzpatrick remedied part of it, but there's still a large, significant portion left. And what's going to happen is what's happening on the south side now is going to happen on the north side. And the Bethlehem that used to exist won't exist as much anymore. And I'd like to make a comparison for you. It reminds me of what happened to the townships during my working years in D.C. People moved out to the townships to get peace and quiet and space. And other people moved out to the townships for the same reason. And after a while, there wasn't so much space anymore, or peace and quiet. And they started complaining about the traffic and so on. A similar thing is happening in Bethlehem. People are not coming here because they are in love with 6-story apartment buildings. They're coming here for other reasons. But in the coming here, they are transforming the city into a city of six-story apartment buildings. So, just words for the wise.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Anybody else in the broad center?
I didn't intend to speak, but the gentleman forced me. I recall the parking garage, very similar to this evening. We heard the pros and cons, and as Bill said, his type of person has a vested interest, very simple, the welfare of the city. And those like Bill who come to speak out are more concerned about the welfare of the city, while those who speak in opposition are here for personal gain. And taking what Bill said one step further, it's unfortunate. For some reason, but those behind that desk seem to pay less attention to those who speak for the welfare of the city as opposed to those who speak for personal gain. Why? I don't know. But Bill's alluded to it. So, Bill Shire is correct in his judgment of the zoning. This whole public hearing is over because it might be illegal at face value, so there's no issue here. So if his words were taken seriously, this public hearing would be adjourned to see whether it's here on legal grounds. But only one council person alluded to spot zoning in a very perfunctory manner. So, the people who speak here for love of this, because of love of the city. And as Bill's mentioned, there are fewer and fewer from months to months, year to year. Why? Because their views are not regarded. They're listened to. In fact, in many cases, they're not even listened to by members behind that desk, not showing interest, at least to pay attention to what's being said, as some people here have mentioned and noticed. So, it's sad. And fortunately, people like Bill Shire and the young gentleman who's a neophyte and is learning how to speak here, and will be a follow-up for Bill, so I suggest that people
working the streets and filling all these doggone potholes, that's going to just go on forever. That's my concern. Do we have the infrastructure to handle all of this growth? And to be honest with you, I don't think we do. If I'm wrong, please tell me. I would love to be wrong in this fact. That's all I have. Thank you.
I
Marty Curatola, 813 Walker Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Director in Bethlehem since I was born. I'm 76, going to be 77 if the Lord wills. This affordable housing thing with these developers coming in, it seems like they're making the city of Bethlehem metropolis Soho. I mean, like, you go to New York City, you're going to pay like $3,000 for an apartment. No, every city should take control of the situation and put a lid on the amount that they can rent. Because every city, we become an example. Greater cities equal greater USA. If the developers are making luxury apartments, fine. First floor luxury apartments, they can charge whatever they want. Second floor, mediocre, comes down a little bit. Third floor, affordable housing of whoever comes first, they can get it. If they're making only $2,000 a month, they shouldn't be paying more than one third of that. That's affordable housing. As far as the parking goes, parking authority is supposed to be an authority on parking. And I went to many of their meetings and made it that one permit per family. Otherwise, if there's two people in a house that have two cars,
Marty,
the second one has to go ahead. Pardon?
Please tie it back to the zoning map.
Oh, the zoning. Okay. All right. As far as, okay, I was talking about the parking because of the zoning, the situation. That doesn't count. Okay. All right. Well, as far as the zoning situation goes, the price, the city could make, put a lid on the amount because it's supposed to be one third of the income is supposed to be affordable housing. Now we can enforce that law on the city of Bethlehem to make it that people earning $1,500 would only have to pay $500 for a bedroom with a bathroom to it. It's just getting out of control. It's not affordable housing. It's like Mr. Shire said, maybe we should get rid of the Star of Bethlehem and put a dollar sign up there. God bless you all.
Thank you. And the last hand I saw was from Lisa.
Hi, my name is Brandon Malik. I'm on Broad Street. I wasn't planning to speak, but I keep seeing these apartments go up all over Bethlehem. And I gotta say, as someone whose grandfather was born in Bethlehem, worked in Bethlehem his whole life, my mom was born in Bethlehem, I've lived in Bethlehem in various different places on and off for about 15 years now. And does that look like Bethlehem to anybody?
No.
Like, does that look like, when you come into Bethlehem and you look around, you see nice historic Bethlehem with the Star and Hotel Bethlehem and all the lovely architecture we have in the city, does that look like it belongs? Or am I crazy here? I haven't heard anybody else say this, but that looks like it belongs at the beach. And the alternative option looks like it belongs in the Soviet Union. So, like, are we even attempting to design to match the city or the aesthetic? Like, everybody else has done a great job with all the other problems of, you know, the parking and the affordable housing and all that, but, like, it doesn't even look like it belongs here. And all the other apartments they're building, and I'm sure a lot of them are owned by Bethlehem Property Group, have the same aesthetic, where it looks like a hotel or it belongs to the beach or it's just ripped out of a, you know, communist trace book. Like, seriously, this is... Everybody thinks it looks at this and goes, oh yeah, that looks great. That looks like it belongs in Bethlehem. I mean, I don't know what the rules are. I understand it's not an historic district, but like, shouldn't we as the community make an effort to have them at least design something remotely aesthetically pleasing and fitting in with the, you know, historic nature of Bethlehem? That's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you. have before heading into the, sorry, the last comment we have before heading into the council meeting.
Hi, my name is Rafael Toledo. I just wanted to say thank you, council, for asking all the questions that us, the people, that we wanted to ask. Living on 18 West Garrison Street, I live right across the street from where they want to do this. I would be affected with it because of the tightness of the block. And the reason why there's not a lot of people that are here that live there was some people moved away, but that is a rental property block. There's a lot of houses that are for rent. We own our house. So as a person that's gonna live right across the street, I will be affected by it, you know? And I just wanted to say that it's a tight block. I know he said that they can knock the building down or whatever, but I'd rather see a flat lot than a building standing like this right in front of my house, where right now the properties that they have across the street look like they're neglected. So you might as well just knock them down, because the aesthetic look of it is not appealing. So I voted against it in 2019, and 2025 I still vote against it, and I'm hoping that you guys can see through that, you know. And thank you, sir, for being a voice for the people. Thank you, council, for answering all the questions that us that live in the area wanted to ask. And thank you.
And so to wrap this up, as a reminder, council's going to be voting solely on a zoning map, and they are not within the land development phase yet. So just solely on the zoning map. A proposed ordinance will be placed on the March 4th 2025 agenda for first reading. That concludes the hearing. Right, moving on to the council agenda. Any question on the minutes before? Right, the minutes stand approved. So I have a couple notes before we head into this meeting, and I'll explain it further under new business. But agenda items 8A through 8O have been removed from the agenda, as well as 10G.
Can you just clarify what 10 was, a 10F or G? 10G
is the certificate of appropriateness for 1304 Spring Street. So it's 10G. 10G. All right, so we're going to open up the floor for public comments. YouTube reminder, if you started this meeting after 7, please make sure to scroll ahead so that the YouTube stream is current rather than a recording of an earlier portion of the meeting. As a reminder, public comment. Wait one moment, please. Public comment. We do have a 5-minute time limit. It is a time for council to listen to you, but not to engage with questions. And as a reminder, we all live here, so be respectful of your community members if they have a difference of opinion. So starting with my people signed up. Regina Padilla is the first person I have signed up to speak.
Hi, my name is Regina Padilla. I'm born and raised in Bethlehem, and now I live in Allentown. But lucky me, I'll have this ugly apartment to move into soon. I would like to apologize for my lisp, as I've heard there's people in this room that don't like speech impediments. just start with that one. Thank you. I'm not here just as a concerned citizen, but as someone whose family history is deeply tied to the rich legacy of Bethlehem, a city that was built by the hard work and sacrifice of immigrants. My great-great-grandfather, Pedro Gonzalez, was born in Mexico and came to Bethlehem in 1916 to work at Bethlehem Steel. For over 40 years, he worked tirelessly at the steel mill from the time that he first stepped foot in the city until he retired in 1959. He didn't just work for the company. He was also an ambassador for it. Bethlehem Steel sent him to Texas and to Mexico to recruit workers. As a result, he brought 1,500 workers and 80 families to Bethlehem, contributing to the growing diversity that has always defined our community. Pedro wasn't just a hard worker. He was also a community builder. He helped organize the opening of the Mexican-American Azteca Club and played a key role in founding the still-standing Puerto Rican Society. He was a proud Mexican-American who loved his home in Mexico and never took for granted the privileges of being an American citizen. Now, as I stand before you today, I urge council to pass the Welcoming City Bill similar to the one passed in Allentown. It's a commitment to ensure that our immigrant community is treated with the dignity and respect that they deserve. It sends a clear message that Bethlehem welcomes all individuals regardless of their background and recognizes the significant contributions that immigrants have made and continue to make to our community. We all know that Bethlehem's identity is deeply entwined with the hard work and dedication of immigrants. Our city's growth, prosperity, and cultural richness have been shaped by them. It is, in fact, the very least that we can do to pass the Welcome City Bill, especially since a policy has already been put in place to guide us in this direction. This bill is not about politics or partisanship. It's about fairness, compassion, and honoring the values that have made our city great. It's about recognizing that the people who built Bethlehem, like my great-great-grandfather, Pedro Gonzalez, they were not just workers, but dreamers who believed in a better future for themselves and their family. They helped make Bethlehem what it is today, and we owe it to them. I'm sorry. And to the future of our city to ensure that every person who calls Bethlehem home is welcome and supported. I would like y'all to put that on your agenda. Thank you.
First, I would like to thank Mr. Miller for the minutes for the last meeting. You took my comments, and I appreciate you listening to them. Now, as it pertains to the Welcoming City bill that was passed in Allentown, I have read the statements released by Chief Cott and Mayor Reynolds, and I gotta say, I'm pretty disappointed. The struggle is twofold, a struggle against tyranny in which we have to try to maintain our material and economic conditions for the good of people of Bethlehem, while at the same time opposing the complete control and rise of fascism in this country. And this is why I can give some leeway to our mayor. He clearly articulated the struggle we are up against and how important it is that we maintain receiving of federal grants. That is fair, but then again, the reasoning for not codifying a bill like that which was passed in Allentown is flimsy at best. Such a bill can't both be interfering with Bethlehem Police Department operations and not change anything. Which is it? And to address the nature of how the city must follow federal law, I'd just like to propose a hypothetical. What if a federal law was passed where each city was required to line up anybody who spoke publicly against the federal government or the president and execute them publicly? Would you follow that law? No. No. Now, let's say there was a law, a federal order, calling for the forced rounding up of people based on where they were born, detaining them in cages for weeks to years before shipping them like human cargo to wherever it was that they were born. That sounds just as sick and inhumane to me. And I know you guys. Chief Cott, I've spoken with you multiple occasions. You are a caring and loving person. If you were a fascist, you've done a very good job at hiding. But ICE is not just an agency, it is a system of oppression. ICE separates families, throws people into detention centers, and subjects them to inhumane conditions. We've heard this phrase before, we're just following orders. It's the same justification used by those who carried out atrocities throughout history. ICE agents are individuals making choices. Choices to tear families apart, kidnap children, and brutalize people. These actions are not justifiable. We must not allow this terrorism to be normalized. We cannot ignore the parallels between ICE's actions and some of the darkest chapters in human history. Just as the Nazis rounded up Jewish families and placed them in concentration camps, ICE is rounding up immigrants and placing them in cages, literally separating families.
Now, the Nazis did not directly call Jews illegal immigrants, but their propaganda effectively portrayed them as a foreign, unwanted element within German society by stripping them of citizenship and actively promoting the idea that Jews did not belong in Germany, effectively rendering them as outsiders with no legal rights within their own country. We must stop history from repeating itself. We failed with the genocide in Palestine. It is imperative that we do everything in our power to prevent and resist the forced removal and ethnic cleansing of our own population. When we allow agencies like ICE to operate without accountability, we normalize the abuse of power. We send a message that it is acceptable to treat people as less than human. This is not a world we want to live in, and this is not a world we want to pass on to future generations. I said many times that it starts here at the local level with the individual. Local governments have the utmost responsibility to stand up to this abuse. Council must not normalize the abuses committed by ICE. Council must not normalize violence committed against the marginalized. Passing a welcoming city resolution can send a clear message. Immigrants or not, our citizens are people, first and always. And we will not participate in the dehumanization of our immigrant population because they are people. We will protect our residents no matter where they were born. And although I have problems with the mayor, I believe he could be much more radical. But at the last meeting during the mayor report, I must commend how honest and direct he was about the federal funding freeze was going to impact the city of Bethlehem. Mayor Reynolds is an incredibly intelligent and articulate man. And whenever anyone tries to challenge him in a battle of words, it always ends terribly for the challenger, mostly Callahan. I am mentioning the fact that he is only...
They're definitely affordable. Better to buy your own place than rent. Don't fall into the category of paying the high rent more than you can afford. As far as the immigrant situation, we all were immigrants. Our country was built on immigrants. But now, we have this ICE thing going on. I don't think ICE is nice. Where it's deporting people, pulling them from their families like that. And especially when it comes to the Mexican people. Everyone from South America should be able to come to the United States as freely as they want and go back. There should be no borders. Reason is because we built this, we took Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona, Southern California from the Mexican people. I'm not Mexican, I'm Italian. But the thing is, I don't think that's proper that we got Santa Anna at gunpoint and said to him, we won't have you hang if you sign a document to give the land to us. It's like going to a poker game with a gun with no money. You know, this isn't proper for everyone in South America. If they want to come here and they want to go ahead and make some money and go back, if they want to be citizens, that's their prerogative. They shouldn't have to be forced to be citizens. Only if they want to. That's as far as like pulling people and transporting them and mistreating them like they are. The city needs to definitely look at the rules that ICE is doing. If it's not proper, don't let them come in. That's where I stand as far as it can. I don't know. Take care. God bless.
As a reminder, it'd be really great if y'all could snap so people can hear their names being called.
Good evening, Council. It's a privilege to speak to you tonight. My name is Dominic Trabassi. I live in downtown Easton, but I'm a graduate of Moravian University. I frequent the city very often. I love it, I care for it, and I want to see it thrive. I'm here to show support for the introduction and passing of an ordinance that required the city of Bethlehem to obtain and maintain a welcoming city rating, offering city services to the great people who live here regardless of their immigration status. It would also help prevent unlawful ICE arrests. Emphasis on the unlawful part. I think this ordinance would be a plain and simple act of good faith for what is an extremely vulnerable population. If we do not act on this now, not only are we making a very scary time for immigrants even scarier, but it will erode the trust of the Bethlehem people who value compassion.
This city was built on immigrants. Who are we to deny today's immigrants the reassurance that their own local government won't turn them over to ICE, even if they are law-abiding? The statement put out by the mayor about Bethlehem being a city that values diversity and respects its citizens means nothing if we can't introduce these incredibly basic protections. If it's true that the criteria in which Bethlehem's police operates falls in line with welcoming city status, then I say prove it. Not only that, but this bill would make it so that a future city council can't decide to make it even worse than it is now for immigrants. This isn't just about right now, it's about ensuring a safe future for honest people. The mayor cites the fact that officers are sworn in with a certain moral code to treat citizens equally and fairly as a reason why we don't need this ordinance. But these performative promises mean nothing in a world with rampant police brutality and racial profiling. Those same officers took similar oaths. Bethlehem can't be a welcoming city if you can't prove it. Having a third party objectively judge how we're doing for our minority immigrant population is vital because we don't already have that outside unbiased perspective. In her statement, Chief Cott says she's worried about local police having to be involved in upholding federal laws, which means in theory she should support this ordinance because it would decrease local involvement, unless of course a warrant is issued. In that case, police would have to comply regardless. If anything, the ordinance means less work for the police department, less following up on ICE leads or chasing after immigration statuses. The police can promise not to collect immigration status all they want, but what good are promises if we don't have consequences for when they're broken? There's also a fundamental misunderstanding from Chief Cott about our cooperation with federal government. We would still have to comply with the federal government after this ordinance passes. That doesn't change. This is a bill about respect and honoring the people that live here, and it would set a great example to neighboring municipalities. Follow in Allentown's footsteps and do the right thing. Thank you for your time.
I've been a resident here for my entire life, and I am proud to live in an area that feels as welcoming and alive as Bethlehem. That being said, there are still ways we can improve, such as passing the Welcoming City Ordinance. Beyond anything else, this seems to me like a human-to-human issue. We need to recognize the value of human beings no matter who they are. I hate the phrase no matter because it does matter. We should get to know the people who are a part of our community, and we need to help support the vulnerable members of our community. What would you think, feel, or do if it was you that they were working against? It is simply a fact that our city was built by immigrants, and we would not be the same without everyone that makes up our community. Why do you think we have such good food, music, events, and community? It's because we are able to recognize and appreciate the value in diversity and how every person has a stake in the city. We need to preserve that welcoming stance by passing the Welcoming City Ordinance. Prove to the people of Bethlehem that they are valued for what they have to offer to our city and the fact that we are all human beings wanting the same things, to live a happy, fulfilling life. I believe the best way to ruin a thriving community is to turn against each other and break the trust in the relationships that we have developed. Instead, we should use the power that we have to build each other up and demonstrate our strength as a community that values all of its members. This is not just an issue for here and now, but for the future generations and for the future of our city and country. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next person I have is Valerie.
Valerie. Okay, first I want to bring up again a comment of mine that was not addressed at the last meeting, which concerns an occurrence 2 meetings ago. To explain briefly, when I commented 2 meetings ago, a side comment was made about me by a council member. Why does she always sound like she's about to cry when she speaks? After the meeting, I approached and said, I always sound like I'm about to cry when I speak because I have a speech impediment. The response I got without any eye contact was, so do I. That was it. I did not receive a private apology, so at the last meeting, I sought a public apology. I did not receive an apology then either. Here I am again. I can bring it up as many times as I need to, but I think that's going to get embarrassing for council, so can we address that today? Moving on, I believe we can make a welcoming city's ordinance happen here in Bethlehem. Now in town, the majority of council was against it at the meeting where it was voted on at the beginning of the meeting, and yet the meeting ended with a unanimous vote in favor. I've seen the statements put out by Mayor Reynolds and Chief Cott, and just like in Allentown, I find that they claim to agree with a lot of the principles that such an ordinance would bring. So what are the issues and how can we resolve them? I want to start by referring to Chief Cott, saying any additional language included in a resolution would not meaningfully strengthen any of our current policies. In the line before that, she actually writes about the potential for a resolution / ordinance, and in her closing statement repeats again about a resolution. We're not asking for a resolution, we're asking for an ordinance. A policy like what we have can be changed at will, and an ordinance cannot. That's meaningful. And Mayor Reynolds refers to the beliefs of the administration. The administration changes with every election. We have a local election coming up. Let's remember that and not assume things will be the same today and tomorrow. So to me, the question is not whether we need an ordinance, but rather how do we pass an ordinance that codifies immigrant protections in a way that works for Bethlehem? The Allentown ordinance passed after revisions. In Bethlehem, there isn't even a bill on the table yet, so it's premature to say this or that detail precludes us from passing an ordinance. If there is something that is stopping you from wanting to pass the bill Allentown did, propose a different wording. If the change is not endangering immigrants, there's probably a way to see eye to eye on that. Something that I find frustrating about Chief Cott's memo is that she starts and ends the memo by claiming that this bill would not meaningfully change how the police department currently operates, but that's not reflected in the body of the memo where she talks about how she believes police operations would be hindered by it. And I'm really suspicious of the insistence that knowing someone's immigration status is a necessary power for a police officer, especially toward victims. Tommy referred to how the bill post is very sensitive to the needs of immigrant crime victims regarding TNU visas. And I also want to hit again on this like mention of a fear that passing this kind of bill lulls people into a false sense of security. And like, you're not paying attention if you think that, I think, because make no mistake, it's just one piece of the toolkit that community members are using to keep our neighbors safe. Education is a huge part of the strategy. Many deportations have been prevented by people knowing their rights. So in addition to rights that apply federally, we can educate people on what the bill means for them. And on the other hand, I find that a lot of the statements made at the last meeting by, you know, people working for the city, the chief and otherwise, could lull people into a false sense of security. I heard members of the public talking about people they know getting deported after being arrested by Bethlehem police. The response from Chief Cott is that the BPD doesn't have the authority to deport people. That's true. I understand the intent to reassure that this came across as dismissive when immigrant families were talking about their lived experiences. Clearly there was a chain of events that led from being arrested by municipal police to being deported by ICE or by order of a judge. That was not acknowledged, and just focusing on the wrong thing. So I'm running out of time, but we have the opportunity to be leaders on this, so let's leave.
Thank you, Mayor.
Hello, my name is Anna Zavaruga at 341 B Spring Street. I'm not going to repeat what all these good people said because I just want to say that I agree with them all. So on that, I really feel that we need to move forward on that, and they spoke very well. I just want to bring two other issues up very quickly. One of them is underneath the bridge at Spring and Conestoga Ave, I think that is, right? I know weeks ago I walked there every day, and I saw these gentlemen looking up, and I was going like, what they're doing? They put some sidewalk closed barricades. Now this is weeks ago,
And the reason they did that, I realized, was because, you know, parts of the bridge are falling down. And every time I walk under there, I'm going, okay, you know, what are the odds that I'm going to walk there at that moment? A piece of cement's going to fall on my head. They've done nothing except for put those barricades, and they walked away. So that there should be some sort of netting or something, or, you know, just, you know, whatever it needs to be done, but it's ridiculous. So, like, every day, it's kind of like, okay, 50-50 chance that I get hit with a big chunk of cement, and that would be the end of it. So I don't know why nobody's pursued that. And then this, the other thing I'd like to mention, our greenway, you know, we've made a lot of progress with that, and it's really great. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the intersection with the small streets that run perpendicular to the greenway, for the most part, previously there were stop signs for the pedestrians or whomever was using the greenway, so we had to stop as the cars came through. I think a lot of the signs have been removed, and I think that's great. But I want to encourage us to go even further, that actually there'd be stop signs for the vehicles going in the alley, and we'd have pedestrian priority, bicycle priority, so that would make the greenway a really effective little avenue that we could, you know, walk, bicycle, and people on in wheelchairs could freely move through that area. That'd be really fantastic. Anyways, have a great night.
Thank you. Next up, we have Sophia.
My name is Sophia, I live in Bethlehem, and I'm here to say the same thing that many of my peers are saying right now about immigrants while making a welcome city here in Bethlehem. I urge you to take action to codify Bethlehem as a welcome city. You guys say Bethlehem is already a welcome city, yet we know in history how when things are not written, it's not guaranteed. And immigrants cannot vote for you. Their daughters and sons can, and all you can do is ask them to acknowledge them. You not codifying Bethlehem as a welcome city is just showing that you don't want to codify immigrants and their existence in this city. You're only erasing them and their efforts by waiting as ICE and Trump administration terrorizes them. Immigrants built and continue to build Bethlehem with resources and community. They sacrifice everything to be here and make Bethlehem a home for everyone, and the council's lack of initiative and urgency to make this ordinance happen only reminds you of who I need to vote for this election, for my parents. People came here last meeting asking you to make a bill codifying Bethlehem as a welcome city. And what was done in the meantime? Rather than taking initiative, making compromises, and being professional, as every meeting is always some sort of banter and always some sort of unprofessionalism, you focus on raising rent and zoning that hurts people like immigrants who do not complain and just continue to keep on giving and giving. And what more do you need? Immigrants already use their lives as payment to make Bethlehem what it is, and so don't take any more. Please pass the ordinance to make Bethlehem a welcome city. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question I have signed up is Victoria.
My name is Victoria, and I am also from Lehigh. And like many here, I am a proud Latina with roots from Spain, Puerto Rico, and Colombia. 2 weeks ago, I stood before you advocating to codify Bethlehem as a welcoming city, essentially following in Allentown's footsteps. Not only do I continue to ask for that, but as the situation has become more dire, I'm here to urge you to better protect our immigrant residents by also enacting clear and strong laws. These laws should prevent city agencies and employees from discriminating based on actual or perceived immigrant status and from asking about or recording sensitive data like citizen status. Why are these protections so crucial? In these 2 weeks of indecision, more atrocities have been inflicted upon migrants across this country, including in areas like Bethlehem. During this period, families have been cruelly torn apart as parents are separated from children. ICE has conducted raids on hospitals and funeral homes and schools and has patrolled the streets of major and adjacent cities. Profiling immigrants based solely on the languages they speak openly and how they look. Disturbingly, there are also ICE impersonators with malicious intentions on emerging Disturbingly, ICE impersonators with malicious intentions have emerged posing as helpers to eradicate immigrant presence. In these weeks, we have lived in constant fear. The City Council's silence has in effect sanctioned these ongoing atrocities, How are we to live our lives when we fear leaving our homes every day without our papers and wondering if we're going to get stopped by some white truck and taken away from everything that we know? Reports have emerged documenting cases of individuals being forcibly taken into ICE custody simply for speaking other languages than English. I, an American citizen, do speak another language and do fear that, something like that will actually happen to me and people like me. This also happens, or could happen, to students, and there have been reports of that too. You are elected on the premise to act in the best interest of people. Is passing something like this not in the best interest of the people you serve to protect? Are you so paralyzed by fear of doing the right thing that you stand idly by while your residents are terrorized? ICE is closer to home than you all realize, than we all realize, and they are affecting residents more than you see. Just because you might think that we're safe does not actually mean we are. And until there are something in place codifying that Bethlehem is a welcoming city, we won't actually truly have that security. For those compelled by statistics, consider this. 50% of the detained immigrants now have not committed any crimes, as reported by NBC News. Moreover, a significant portion of immigrants work in agriculture, construction, and cleaning, jobs that many Americans are reluctant to take, yet somehow we are accused of stealing jobs. But if you do not believe me, as someone stated in the last city council meeting, Google is free. Please use it. And for the migrants in this room or watching the live stream, no dejaremos de luchar para que te sientes seguros, which translates, we will not stop fighting until you feel safe. And to the members of City Council, please reflect deeply on your decisions, for these actions you take here will inevitably place you on either the right or wrong side of history. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes all of our public comments. We've signed up for public comments. I'm going to go around the room, starting to the left. And as we approach, remember a reminder of the 5-minute time limit. And please keep the sidebar comments to yourselves. We want to hear what people have to say. We're not trying to antagonize anybody here. I saw you first.
Hi, my name is Karen, and I'm here to speak about just the statement that was made by the city. Because last meeting we were here just asking for a welcoming city bill to be considered, but instead we got a letter that really just was really dismissive and not really wanting to even consider it or hear us out. I think, like everyone else who has been on the agenda, immigrants deserve the opportunity to speak, and like other people have said, to really give you what we're experiencing, right? And like what we want, not be spoken for, because I mean, a black and white statement posted on social media, that is the lowest effort, right? Like, these meetings can go on for hours if we need to. We're not just gonna be like, oh great, this statement, it's gonna help me. It's not. What's really gonna help is you guys listening to us, giving us a chance to actually see, like, was anyone even involved from the immigrant community in the writing of that statement? Because as an immigrant, I don't know where all of that safety came from. I think as a person of color in this city, as an immigrant in this city who has been here for several years, almost my entire life, it is our due diligence to be able to put together this bill, review it, and even if it's the lowest effort that this city can do, and if we're already doing what the policy supposedly, if we're supposedly already doing it, then why is it such a hassle to just stand up for us in a time when no one else is hearing us, no one else is worrying the way that we are? So why not just hear us out? Like, that's the first step, right? And we're not even doing that, which is crazy. I lost my phone because we've been here for so long, and that's how important this is, that we've stayed for hours and didn't leave, because this isn't just a job, this isn't just a building,
This isn't just an apartment or a lawyer or my job. This is my life. And I'm not a criminal. My parents are not criminals. We're here fixing your cars. We're here cooking your food. Like, we're not breaking the law. Trust me, we're not stealing your property. And you can't even put bail on the table. Like, wow. That says a lot. So I hope you can reconsider that and just take this low-hanging fruit to really just stand up for people who are vulnerable, who are unheard, who are doing their best to survive, and who love Bethlehem. And clearly, I hope that is made public and in law of support of immigrants. So.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Aoife Warren. I'm a resident of West Bethlehem. I've lived in Bethlehem for about 5 years. I'm an active volunteer for the transgender community. I'm transgender myself. I'm fluent in Spanish. I have worked in Spanish communities for over 20 years as a photographer. I've seen what ICE raids do to cities in New Jersey. I've seen what ICE raids do to cities in New York City, where I was born. Not putting something like this on the table is an insult to all of the residents of Bethlehem. We are a very diverse community. We speak many languages, and this country was built by immigrants. Now, you've put non-discrimination policies into effect here with help of some people that I work with in my orgs. So grateful for them. Because when I first came to this community, I was terrified for my life working in the downtown. People would come in with literal Nazi symbols on their sidearms in local restaurants. I'd never seen anything like that in my life. Now, if you can imagine what it's like, when I have worked for different companies throughout the states, and what it's like to have to deal with coworkers who are terrified for their life for these raids. I had a panic attack with the anti-LGBTQ stuff going on, trying to erase my identity, and that panic attacks at work. Thank God, work knew and was supportive. But I'm a first generation immigrant myself. My parents were first immigrants, and I'm first generation here as well. We need to put this on the table immediately so that the fear can be eliminated, so that we can feel we can stand up to each other for a community. That's really all I have to say on the matter. You'll probably hear more from me. This is my first time speaking here at the council, and I'd just like to say thank you very much for hearing my voice today.
Sam, and I live in Fountain Hill, but it's about a 30-minute walk from here, and I work in Bethlehem. So I just want to echo the calls for a welcoming city ordinance. Many of the people who spoke before me were very well spoken, and I have to agree with what they've said. And I just want to emphasize that if you're already doing the things that should make immigrants feel safe, then why not codify it? And one other thing to add, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but there are fear-mongering narratives spread about immigrants, particularly those who are non-white. You hear this dialogue about, you know, illegal immigrants being criminals, being like taking jobs. And I hope more people can reach the realization that these tropes pit fellow working class people against each other. It has people worried that their neighbors are taking more from this pool of scarce resources, but in reality, there's enough for us all. And these tropes are not only harmful in that they pit working class people against one another, but they're also profoundly racist. Thank you.
Anybody in the center want to make public comment? Mary Jo?
Mayor Joe McCool, 449 Grandview Boulevard. This is the beginning of my third year attending council meetings. The last meeting was long and laborious. Reminds me of those a year ago. There was much talk and discussion about Bethlehem adopting a welcoming city ordinance. I have felt free to express my opinion and viewpoint until the last meeting. Tonight I am speaking with great trepidation. I have even defended privately some council members after they were viciously attacked verbally. After voicing my opinion at the last meeting, I no longer feel welcome. As I was the only one speaking with a different viewpoint, someone speaking after me called me a racist. I was told by someone attending that I should leave. No one on council or within the administration came to my defense. Not at all welcoming, unless the person shares the same viewpoint. Shame on this governing body. Extremely despicable and disheartening. 12-year-old Jocelyn Mangari, Rachel Morin, 13-year-old New York City girl, 16-year-old Lisbeth Medina, and most known, Laken Riley. If you are unfamiliar with these individuals, shame on you. Jocelyn was raped and murdered in Texas. Rachel, a mother of five, was raped and killed while jogging. The 13-year-old girl was raped in New York City while her friend was forced to watch. Lisbeth was brutally murdered in her home. Laken Riley, a Georgia nursing student, raped and murdered while jogging. Illegal aliens committed all of these heinous acts. These were someone's wife, mother, daughter, sister, friend, cousin. Some of these actions occurred in sanctuary cities. Some were arrested numerous times for crimes, but because of liberal policies, were never tried. A welcoming city policy, or even the current policy, only serves to enable this kind of brutal, vicious action. Why would Bethlehem Police work in conjunction with Pennsylvania State Drug Task Force to curtail the trafficking of drugs only to allow the possibility of other acts of violence to occur? Much as this activity is conducted by MS-13 and Tren de Aragua gangs, both are continually active in Allentown and Easton. Does Bethlehem honestly believe these gangs respect city borders? This truly frightens me. When I mentioned this to a member of council, I was dismissed rudely. Last year, there was a 2.6% tax increase. The mayor and council expressed concern regarding federal funding because of the current administration in Washington. Funding will decrease if cooperation decreases, like it or not. I want these criminals out of my city. I want to feel safe in my neighborhood. At this point, my feelings of safety are decreasing. If funding decreases, my taxes will only increase. They already increase at the whim of this administration. Let me state for the record, my vote goes to those who support my values and my pocketbook. I am not alone, and this past election proves me right. I want the record to reflect that I am not a racist. My parents came from diverse backgrounds. I married into a full-blooded Syrian family. Both my husband and I were completely accepted by each other's families. I taught in a center city school. My students included Muslim, Syrian, Hispanic, Chinese, and white students. All were treated fairly and with great compassion. No complaints from parents. Several years back, I had a conversation with a 22-year-old Temple student. The gist of this conversation ended with her calling me a white woman of privilege. She began her studies majoring in pre-med and graduated with a degree in social media management. Talk about a gross turn of events and thinking. This body allows all forms of speech supported by the First Amendment. Forgive me, but hate speech is not protected under the First Amendment. Thank you.
Anybody else in the center? Mr. Shire?
I'd like to mention a study by the Cato Institute, which I mentioned before, which is relevant. The Cato Institute is more conservative than the Heritage Foundation, which is the one that produces Project 2025. The Cato Institute would be described as libertarian. They want the smallest government possible. But they're also rather academic. And a couple of years back, one of their researchers took advantage of a Texas law that requires the local and state police in Texas to determine the immigration status of anybody who's arrested. They compared these numbers of arrests with the populations of three different groups: native-born citizens, legal immigrants, and illegal immigrants. And the estimate of illegal immigrants was probably on the low side. The results were, and by the way, the study has been updated to include convictions, not just arrests. And anybody who's interested can go online, Google Cato Institute, C-A-T-O, named after an eminent Roman, and arrests of immigrants. And you'll find both articles, which you can print out. They found out that the group with the highest arrest rate were the native-born citizens. Next came the legal immigrants, and the group with the lowest arrest rate were the illegal immigrants, which is understandable because illegal immigrants don't want to come in contact with the police. And so that's some solid research, and Mary Jo and I disagree on this. There are some violent criminals who have been convicted, and they should be the ones that be first deported, but the way it's happening is totally ridiculous. I'm not going to pound the lectern again tonight. A little history. Turn of the last century, there was a lot of immigration from Eastern and Southern Europe, and it was a lot easier back then. You just showed up at Ellis Island, and if you weren't coughing, they let you in, basically. That's an oversimplification. But there was a backlash then, right after World War I, and the Red Scare. People were afraid that a lot of these immigrants were communists. And you had something called the Palmer Raids, which I was not aware of until recently. Palmer was a federal bureaucrat. I forget exactly what his exact position was, but he was in charge of these raids, and they were rounding up immigrants and deporting them, which is parallel to today. One further story. This doesn't have to do with immigration, but it is similar. People of my age are familiar with the saga of Marian Anderson, the celebrated contralto, and the Daughters of the American Revolution, who have a very nice auditorium called Constitution Hall in D.C. It's on 17th Street, just south of the White House, decided that to disinvite her from appearing there. So Eleanor Roosevelt, it is said, prevailed on the powers that be so that she sang at the Lincoln Memorial to a large audience. It was a very significant event. Sometime after that, the Daughters of the American Revolution invited Franklin Roosevelt to address their annual convention or whatever. And the first two words he uttered were, "Fellow immigrants." So, I'm very sympathetic to these calls for stand up and be counted, be a welcoming city. But we have a president right now who is a very vindictive person. He has threatened to cut off all federal aid to California because they do some things he doesn't like.
Very gently, Bill, start up.
Okay. Very quickly, then. Sometimes the best, I have mixed feelings, but sometimes the best form of resistance is passive resistance.
Thank you.
Well, could I just say one little thing.
Next time.
Oh, come on, next Rachel.
Time.
Come on.
Next
come
time. On. I will be here to listen afterward, I promise, next time. Anyone else in the Wine Center?
No, I will hit the lectern.
And I hear you. I feel you. Your pain is validated here.
My name's Mike O'Hare, 632 4th Avenue, Bethlehem. I've been in the Lehigh Valley all my life. Lived in Bethlehem probably close to 30 years. I was very glad to see that the Easton mayor and the Easton police chief spoke against the welcoming ordinance. And I was very glad to see that our police chief and our mayor did the same. Bethlehem should not pass a welcoming city ordinance. Bethlehem is a welcoming city already. I would imagine if you polled the 78,000 people in the city, probably the opinion would be a lot different than what we've heard here tonight. Most people love immigrants. They want to see legal immigration. They want to see it done right, but they want criminal, illegal immigrants taken out of the country. It's a danger to our community. It's a danger to our society. If I were to break into your house, raid your refrigerator, sit down in your living room, you'd call the police because I'm violating your personal rights. And it's no different with this. Just to let you know, I think we do need legal immigration. And for example, I have two daughters-in-law, Paola, who's from Peru, and my other daughter-in-law from Nepal. It took them years to get into this country, but they came in legally. We do need to reform immigration. We need immigrants in the country, but it needs to be done in an orderly and legal process that's beyond the purview of city council. That's a federal thing. We should appeal to our representatives, to our people that represent us in the federal government to get going on that. Just one other thing, even though I disagree with most of what people have said here tonight, I always learn something when I listen to opposing points of view. So even though we may not like what other people say, we can at least learn one or two things in the course of that, what's going on. So thanks.
Thank you. Anybody else in the Bronx Center?
Hello, my name is Ronald Johnson. I can't always learn from misinformation, though. Most of my community members here today are not criminals. Many people who are working in the restaurants fearing work site raids from the fascist Immigration and Customs Enforcement are not criminals. They are hardworking individuals trying to provide for their families. I would like to mention that on February 5th, the United States Justice Department released a memorandum or moratorium that essentially, on February 5th, that about restoring the death penalty. And what that entails is individuals who they said traverse, illegal aliens who traverse the United States borders, the policy would apply to them. So that means millions of hardworking families here in the United States are not just subject to deportation or torture in Guantanamo Bay, but also subject to murder, state-sanctioned murder. Our communities are living within fear of state-sanctioned terror. And I really implore and beg every member of Bethlehem City Council to consider the people that cannot speak here today, the people who are fearful to go to the grocery store, the people who are fearful to go to work every day. My godparents, senior citizens, worked here for decades. We're undocumented. They self-deported themselves out of fear. I have to deal with members of my community who I love more than anything in this world and deal with their tears and their crying and their feelings of being dehumanized and their perpetual fear. So I beg every member of Bethlehem City Council to recognize the human dignity of our community members, to recognize that the city of Bethlehem was created by immigrants from the Czech Republic, from Slovakia, from Slovenia, from Serbia, from Southern Europe, from Eastern Europe, from Northern Europe, from all parts of Europe, but also other parts of the world besides just Europe. And I love European immigrants, but I would like it if immigrants from darker, from other parts of the world, were also treated like human beings. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else in the Broad Center want to speak?
Hello, can you hear me? Okay. My name is Logan Shire. I'm a first year student at Moravian University. And, you know, I moved to this city because I was kind of enamored by everything about it. And I found it to be a very welcoming place. And it was somewhere where I wanted to, you know, move on to my academic career. And so I moved here because where I come from is not so similar. And what worried me, you know, recently with everything that's been going on is, you know, I was sitting in class and I got an email from the president, all of us got an email from the president of the university outlining what we had to do if ICE agents showed up on campus. And on top of everything else that we have to deal with as students and as citizens and as people living in the city of Bethlehem, you know, as a student having to balance athletics and academics and work and going home and coming back and forth and doing day-to-day things while also having to worry about whether or not agents are going to come in a van and racially profile you based on their perceived, how they perceive you to be, you know, where you're from. And it scares the hell out of me, to be honest, because I have friends and I have family members whose, you know, immigrant status, their documentation at times has been in question. And so, you know, on top of everything else I have to worry about, having to worry about wonder whether or not my friends and my family are going to be profiled, if they're going to be picked up, and if they're ever going to be sent away, is, it has a lot of pressure on an individual, and it has a lot of pressure on a community. And that's a kind of pressure that builds up over time, and that kind of thing can bring resentment. So, you know, I've seen the statement put out by the city of Bethlehem, and I've seen the, you know, memos and everything, and I just, like other people here have stated tonight, I just wish that there would be some concrete action put down, like a welcoming city ordinance. And the idea that it's, you know, a false sense of safety or whatever the term was used, right now there's no sense of safety. I mean, I know people that I've become friends with since I've came to college here who are afraid for their family members. Like I said, what happens if, you know, it's happened here. It's happened in the Lehigh Valley. There was a student at Muhlenberg who was picked up by ICE agents and detained and asked for their citizenship because they didn't look a certain way. And this is something that the people of Bethlehem have to deal with now. And so I would just ask that their elected officials represent them and that they stand up for them and that they show, they do as much as you can, because I know there's legal limitations with federal law and everything, but do everything that you can, please, I urge you. Thank you.
Thank you. Turning to the right side of the room,
Hello, my name is Cameron. I'd like to thank the people who have shown up today and shared their very real, personal, and painful stories. I'd also like to thank the council for listening and for continuing to feel compassion for your constituents, and remind you that although this is a routine meeting for you, you are legislating on people's lives, and you are legislating on our fear. I am here to urge the council to introduce and support an ordinance to declare Bethlehem a sanctuary city. No one is illegal on stolen land. You are governing on traditional Lenape land, land that was stolen and destroyed by the white nationalism that this country was founded on, the white nationalism that is rapidly increasing in our country once again, and you have the opportunity to reverse that with your positions. There is no humane way to argue for the rights of people to be here, to live a safe life, to not live in fear, to not be put in concentration camps, for God's sake. If I have to argue with you on this issue, it is an indictment on both of our humanity. What I am saying should sound familiar to you because I said it to you 2 weeks ago. A lot of people who have shown up today were here 2 weeks ago. I counted almost 40 people 2 weeks ago, none of whom were asked any questions by City Council about what the verbiage of the ordinance that we would like is, how it might be applicable to Bethlehem, or why the many immigrated residents of Bethlehem who spoke are afraid of Bethlehem city government collaborating with ICE. After public testimony ended, however, City Council asked the mayor and the chief of police questions that could have been asked directly to the people most affected. In my experience, this is unique to Bethlehem City Council. In most of the testimonies I've been present to in various cities across the country, my representatives at least have treated myself and other residents with enough dignity to look us in the eye, and they would usually ask us questions related to our testimony. These actions treated us as if we are not capable of speaking on our lived experience, as if we are not worth speaking to, not to mention they give us no opportunity to respond to the inaccurate claims. This is why we are here again. So let's clarify a few things that were said in the last meeting. First off, this is not a resolution we are proposing, it's a bill. Second, Chief Cott has said that a sanctuary city would give people a false sense of security. Does the chief of police not believe that we are secure? What would make this sense of security false if we are legislating against the invasion of our city and removal of our people? From my impression of Chief Cott's comments, the police policy is to not collaborate with ICE. So we should feel secure. Why not legislate that security? Why not reassure your residents? Third, the claim was made that there are no ICE raids to the police chief's knowledge that have happened in this area, and this is something that I know from personal experience is false. I don't want to speak on my friend's private experiences too much, but I have heard of multiple experiences, and I have witnessed them as well, and at least one example has already made headlines at Muhlenberg. Council, look around you. The people here are peaceful now, but we have numbers. What do you think will happen when you reject this bill? I'd like to end this by giving council ample opportunity to answer questions until my time runs out, and if I can't answer it, someone else who testifies after me will be able to. Do any of you have questions?
This isn't a time that we engage in question and answer.
Okay, then I will be reading the ordinance until my time is up. Let's find it here. All right. Section 2, Certified Welcoming City Designation. Mandated star ratings. The city, during its 2025 certification, shall obtain an initial rating and work to achieve and thereafter maintain a star rating of no less than 3 stars under Welcoming America Certified Welcoming Standard 2.0 star system. Notwithstanding the foregoing, the city may and should continue the efforts to create policies and procedures and to take actions towards obtaining higher star ratings, including those designated as 4 and 5, all in an effort to advance the city's commitments to ensure equitable and inclusive policies and inclusive access to all residents, including migrants, to the city's governmental programming, services, and processes, provide a culturally and ethnically diverse workforce, further strengthen the city's workforce by improving integration, promote and support the elimination of barriers to both child and adult education for immigrants, assure that the city's residents continued to be treated equitably and fairly without regard to their immigrant status, disability, language, preference, gender, or sexual orientation, and ensure that the city takes a lead in promoting these principles. All right. Section 3 has, here we go. Non-intervention with respect to citizenship and intervention. Requesting, accessing, or disclosing information prohibited. No official or employee of the city shall require into an individual citizenship or immigration status unless required to do so by the state or federal law or
Thank you very court. Much. Thank you very much.
Please ask questions of me.
Anybody else in the wide center? Turning to the right. Does anybody want to? Yes, sir.
Good evening, Council. My name is Bishop. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm addressing you all in a third language. I come from a country called Botswana, so I was an international student at Lehigh University. I've lived in Bethlehem for the last 6 years. Did my undergrad here, now I currently work for the university, and I have been a resident of Bethlehem throughout that whole period. There's a couple of things I guess I wanted to address. You know, there's this sleight of hand that people do that bothers me. You know, it's You know, of course, I'm a wonderful person. I don't have any hatred. In fact, you know, I'm married to this wonderful, diverse person. And of course, he's not a criminal. But all these other people, though, are. You know, my in-laws are so diverse, and they're not criminals. But your side of the family or your grandparents are. I don't understand this argument. It's, of course, the people that I know are wonderful, but the people that are going to come themselves are not wonderful people. They're not grandmothers, they're not mothers, they're not husbands themselves. They are criminals. And there's this attempt to make the word immigrant synonymous to being a criminal. And the first rule of being an immigrant is actually, as somebody mentioned, we're not only law-abiding citizens, we're actually very law-avoidant citizens. First rule of being an immigrant is not to get in trouble. So this idea that immigrants are synonymously and necessarily criminals, and we should think of them and frame them from that point of view, I don't think anyone came here and ordered or argued that the city of Bethlehem welcomed criminals, unless, of course, you think the word criminals represents the word immigrant. And I think that's the very definition of having a racist view. Because you think by virtue of people being different, they are prone to being a certain way. Criminals come in all shades and colors and shapes and forms. Some of them are black, some of them are white, some of them are from everywhere. So criminality is not an element of immigration by any argument you could pull up. So pointing to some issue and trying to make it synonymous to this group of people who are actually very vulnerable and actually need more law protection rather than less, I think is something we should avoid, and it's a very dangerous thing to do, because we're not criminals. We are not criminals, we're immigrants. And to argue that is also to assume, you know, Americans, or, you know, the real Americans, you know, to use some people's words, are somehow immune to this thing called circumstance. We're not. People move for all sorts of reasons, and usually for very unfortunate circumstances, usually for in search of better life. And we all, by virtue of being human, are not immune to circumstance. It doesn't respect color, creed, or anything. By being human, we want better for ourselves. That's why people move. And I would like to end with a quick story that I learned as a kid. You know, there was this story of a young man who was bullied at school, you know. His bully would just beat him up, do everything, you know, every day. And one day this young man had to come up with a plan, I guess. And when he was confronted by his bully, you know, standing face to face, and he knew what that meant. He knew that it was, I guess, his time to get beat up. But this one day he looks in the eyes of his bully, and then he draws a line on the sand. And he looked right at his bully and said, "I dare you to cross it." Of course, the bully's thinking, "What is this? What is this young man up to?" And the bully crosses the line, of course. And then the young man looks at him and says, "See, now we're all on the same side." You know, humans have these interesting things we do where we draw lines in the sand and create sides. And somehow that prevents us from seeing we're all in the same side. A lot of these conversations I had, as if, you know, it's them against us, or there is an us and a them. We're all, look around. This is a room full of immigrants discussing how we should treat ourselves. But somehow we think we're talking about some other immigrants somewhere that are criminals that are not like us. I mean, of course, we are all wonderful people. But those other guys that are coming, my goodness, what criminals they are. What we are talking about today is to make Bethlehem a welcome city for all of us in this room. Forget the people. The immigrants are right in this room. And we're not talking about some criminals elsewhere. We're talking about the people in this room that don't feel welcome in the city and feel unsafe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, City Council. My name is Sebastian Zavaruka. I live at 341 Spring Street, Bethlehem. I've been a lifelong, well, not lifelong, but I grew up in Bethlehem, went to Liberty High School, and grew up in Lehigh Valley. Honestly, I have wrote my own speech, but after that, I have nothing more to say. I mean, that was just, everything that I think you guys need to hear. So thank you for listening.
Thank you. Anyone else to the right? All right, that brings the first section of public comment to a close. We're going to move on to public comment on ordinances and resolutions being voted on this evening. As a reminder, 8A through 8O are removed from the agenda, as well as 10F. Sorry for the confusion earlier. It is 10F that is removed from the agenda. So public comment on things being voted on, turning to the left. No? Turning to the center. Mr. Shire?
Bill Shire, just two very brief comments. I support the idea of the salary increases, which I advocated a couple of years ago. I'm aware enough of what it's like to be a council member, and a conscientious council member spends an awful lot of time, and it's certainly worth a minimum of $10,000 a year. And my other comment concerns, have you taken 1304 Spring Street off the agenda?
That's off the agenda, yes.
Sorry? It's off the agenda?
It's off the agenda, yes. It is not on the agenda.
Okay.
Thank you, Bill. Anyone else in the White Center? And we are not voting on a council increase tonight. That is a memo. Anyone else in the center? Anyone to the right? Okay. That concludes public comment. Moving on to old business. Do we have any old business? All right. Moving on to new business, before I turn to my fellow council members for their new business, 8A through 8O were removed from the agenda because of advertising requirements. We have very specific advertising requirements. Publications have changed, so we have to advertise with someone else. So we have not met the deadline for 7 days of reporting. So we are moving those from the agenda. They will appear on the next agenda. Thank you to the administration for being patient with those finance items. Also, 10F was removed from the agenda at the developer's request. And that will appear on a future agenda. So turning to my left, do any council members have any business that they want to address?
It's a blank question. I'm not sure if it's Mr. Alcar or who, but the woman who talked about the bridge at Conestoga and Spring Street, do you know? Can you just give an update on that? Thank you.
Yeah, through regular inspections, a deficiency in that bridge was identified, and we're just following up on that. I'm sure that at the appropriate time will minimum secure the bridge, meaning that we'll do some soundings or knock off any loose concrete, make sure that the remaining concrete that's up there is sound and is not likely to fall before we fully reopen it and the issue is completed.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Thank you, everybody, for coming out. I'm sorry that most of you left at this point. That's unfortunate. I do want to say that I agree that we need to reject the false stereotype of immigrants, whether they're documented or undocumented, as being in some way more criminal than people who happen to be, by the good luck, born here or, you know, become naturalized citizens. Really appalling. And I was particularly sad that Hannah Graybeal left, because I've known her since she was in kindergarten, when she was one of my daughter's dear friends, and seeing her stand up on behalf of her community really warmed my heart today. I want to thank Aoife for coming and speaking on another community's rights, because solidarity between LGBTQIA folks and immigrant communities and women and others is really, really important in this moment when some of these very communities are trying to be told that they don't even exist. So I really appreciated her coming out and speaking as well. I may have a different opinion about how we can best protect our residents of every immigrant status, but certainly my views on what's happening right now in our country do not differ. So I just wanted to say that.
Thank you. Council, to my right, does anyone have any new business?
Yeah, I have just a couple of questions to follow up on the policies that, or the statements that were put out within the past few days. In terms of, and it applies to police policies and also to administrative policies, I don't know who could speak to the administrative ones, but so one question would be, where are the policies for city administration, like the language policies or for police policies? Where are these written?
So we have directives that govern the police department that basically set operations. And those directives can be found online. If you go to the city website, click the police department, there's a section that says policies and directives. For example, 1.1.4, which is prohibition against bias-based policing, can be found on that website, and individuals can read what the directive states in regard to what we can and can't do, you know, if we want to stop somebody, if we want to question them, different things that are prohibited. Not only due to the Fourth Amendment, but also as our accreditation through CLIA.
Okay. And those policies, is there a process for if somebody were to want to update or change them? Like, a lot of the comments have spoken to, well, what if it's not fantastic Chief Cut in, you know, several years? What are the procedures that the department goes through when policies are revised or changed?
So it'll start off at the very, you know, line level with the officers that may be subject matter experts, and then it works its way up the police administration to be changed and go through a workflow. But as well as taking comments from our community, working together with community members, subject matter experts in the field, that's where we take a lot of our direction from. And as well as accreditation standards. So there are standards that have to be met in those policies and directives. So that's where a lot of that background comes from.
Got it. So the accreditation body reviews the policies regularly?
Yes, on a yearly basis, they review our policies and procedures. As well as we have to show proofs that we're doing what we say we're doing. So, for example, the prohibition against bias-based policing, any complaints that come into the Bethlehem Police Department where someone alleges any type of bias-based policing have to be investigated. Those investigation numbers, those investigations get looked over by the accrediting agency to make sure that we're complying with our process.
Okay. And then the last part of the question there would be, what are the consequences for not following policy? I assume that there's a complicated process because of labor, the unions and whatnot. But what is like the overarching way that it's dealt with?
On an organizational perspective, we can lose our accreditation. On an individual perspective, officers will be disciplined. Depending on what exactly that infraction is, that violation is, it could be anywhere from dismissal to a verbal counseling, a written reprimand, additional training. So we have a disciplinary matrix that we have a progressive discipline plan.
Okay. But it would definitely depend on the violation.
Got it.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I had the same questions for the administration in terms of, like, for the non-police administration, in terms of the policies that were referenced in the statement that was put out, like, where those are written, what's the process for updating or revising them, and the consequences for if somebody's found to be not following. Is there anyone here who's able to speak to those?
My recollection is they were large police policies. Which ones
are you referencing? I'm recalling, and I do not have, I could pull up the statement from online, but I was recalling something about a language policy that I know there's going to be more work done through the Health Bureau on, but about, you know, communicating in people's languages and our efforts for diversity and inclusion, et cetera. I know there was reference to, like, the different flag raisings, which I know there are proclamations for, et cetera. But the one example that I'm thinking of without looking back at the words right this second is the language policy.
Yeah. She mentioned health.
There's the communication plan that the Health Bureau is kind of spearheading, and it's not only addressing the Health Bureau, but it's comprehensive. It's looking at all the various bureaus and departments in the city and trying to make sure that we're getting the best information out to the public in not only English, but also 30% of our population is Hispanic. I forget the percentage of how many people speak a secondary language in their household, but so we're better communicating with the public, not just putting things out in English. So that's currently going on right now. Myself and Chief Reich actually met with the communication specialist this past week to go ahead and work on that plan.
And I think the other policy that I was thinking of was data storage. I know that we don't habitually ask in the administration for information about immigrant status. So is there anywhere that that information would be kept, even though it's not habitually collected? Like, do we have any of those records kept anywhere?
Only if it would be in a police report.
I would think only in a police report in the narrative section.
There's nowhere
else. Off the top of my head, I don't believe that we would have that information
in any databases.
In the database, it would be in the narrative portion.
Like in an individual report, in a narrative, if it somehow was relevant or came up in that case.
Thank you. Those were the questions that came.
Any other questions from members of the council or any other new business?
I have a couple of questions, but one is, are you aware of any ICE raids in Bethlehem in the last, well, let's say months since the new administration?
I am not. And like I explained to some folks beforehand, though, I'm not always notified. So there are times where other law enforcement agencies will come in and give us professional courtesy, let us know, hey, we're coming to serve a warrant at 123 Main Street. I have not received any notification of any ICE activity here in the city of Bethlehem.
Okay, thank you. And I wanted to clarify for those that had spoken earlier that my understanding from the Allentown ordinance is that the reason it was unanimously passed because they changed the language from mandate to suggest. The language is such that it suggests they follow the welcoming city policies. Okay, so I guess I think this is a legal question for one of the lawyers in the room. Does that really give the city a lot of legal bite because you're suggesting, you're not mandating, and it, you know, is there really much of a difference as far as what we're doing now is everything is really following the welcoming policy, especially the police, is there really much of a difference legally if we do the welcoming city like Allentown says would suggest or not have it?
I don't think it adds anything legally.
Okay, that's what
it's
I thought. I wanted to just clarify that.
Symbolic kind of a thing,
right,
in terms of
just,
legally...
It's not mandating, so that
that's right,
suggests is a very not strong word, let's put it, I guess, depending on the situation. Okay. The only other thing I wanted to say is I do thank everybody who came out. I can certainly understand and hear the fear. I know it's deplorable, the times that we're living in now. And I want to clarify, too, that, and I know I say this all the time, but it's true. I mean, I've worked with immigrants and refugees for a long time, but especially I have many, if not most of my students were immigrants or refugees in the last 20 years in my high school working. And I know people talk, there were a lot of talk about people that are illegal immigrants naturally being criminals, but and about the legal process. You know, when my ancestors came over, it wasn't a process. Like Mr. Shire said, you get on the boat, you come off Ellis Island, and if you don't appear like you're sick or, you know, carrying a deadly contagious disease, you're okay, you're in. Now it's really different. It takes years and years. And I know this because of working with my students, and I have a dear friend who's working on the border trying to get the people that are coming in to be legal, and it just is a lot of red tape and a lot of barriers. But I know from my students and families, what I saw all the time was the reason they came here is because, especially the males, once they were 12 or 13, if they didn't join a gang, them and their parents would be dead. And if the girls stayed there, they would be raped or killed by the gang members. So they came to literally save their lives, all the kids and families that I had interacted with. And I think that we really need to be clear that, you know, that generalization and stereotype that they're coming here so they can do drugs and do, I mean, sell drugs and do illegal things is far, far from the truth. I mean, it broke my heart to see the students and families I worked with because they literally gave up everything in their native land, everything to come here to save primarily their children's lives. And they are so grateful to be here. And they're in a struggle, a years-long struggle to be legal citizens. It's not easy. So I understand that, and I want to clarify for those who were stating otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I ask my questions, I just wanted to know, I know there was a couple statements made by the administration, by the police, and by the police union. Did any of you want to talk about the statements that you made? Now is a great time. If not, I'll just go into my questions. Sounds like we're good.
What I will say is, again, I know I said it last meeting, things are constantly changing and evolving, and we are trying our best to keep on top of all the different things that are going on in Washington, outside of Washington. We're going to continue to work with our community partners, our community members, to make sure that we're doing everything in our power to make sure that everyone here in the city of Bethlehem feels safe and is proud of their community. So that's something that I know that I don't want to speak for the administration, but I know that Ms. Santoro and I recently met with some community members last week to talk about how to improve things and how to go forward and continuing this dialogue. So it's something that we plan on continuing. But something I did want to reiterate is this, for us, this has not been reactionary. This is something that has been long in the making, something that we've worked on even before I became chief, just because of, you know, as a detective lieutenant in charge of our investigations division, we saw how members of our community, the most vulnerable and marginalized, were being victimized over on the Greenway. So it's something that we've really been working on, is trying to build better relationships with community members and have policies and practices in place that would protect people. So again, just to reiterate, I'm looking forward to continuing that dialogue with community members, hearing people's perspectives, and working towards making Bethlehem a better place for its residents.
I would just add, it was said earlier tonight by one of the speakers, we are not immune from circumstances. And I think, as the chief said, we're in a very rapidly changing environment right now with the administration and what's coming. So we're not immune from those circumstances, and we'll continue to monitor those. And I guess I would add that's true of a police officer in the street, too. They're not immune from the circumstances either. So it's very difficult to legislate absolutes in terms of police behavior because they're not immune from circumstances, and it's hard to legislate and predict everything that could possibly develop. So the policies outlined by the chief, try to hire the right people, you might try to be selective in who you hire, make sure sure you have best practices, follow the gold standard of certification. You do training, you pick your supervisors, and then you trust the people that you've sent out there to deal with those circumstances, which may not be specifically spelled out somewhere in a policy. At the last meeting, there was a lot of talk about the high-speed chase in West Bethlehem that ended with a lot of collisions and things of that nature. And the state police matter didn't involve the city, but the question was asked of the chief, do we have policies on chases? And she went on to describe, we do, and it outlines many variables that have to be taken into account in the moment. But you don't have an absolute policy that says you must never chase in a residential neighborhood because you could be chasing a terrorist or a serial killer or something like that. So it's very difficult to legislate absolutes. And I was sort of reminded of that with the speaker who said earlier, you know, we are not immune from circumstances.
Very valid points. And Chief Cott, I do have a couple of questions because thinking about absolutes, we've talked a lot about, like, the past couple of weeks about compliance versus over-compliance, things that we legally have to do versus things that we are not encouraging our officers to do. Has there been consideration given to different penalties for specifically these types of things, over-compliance with federal mandates as opposed to just keeping our accreditation and our stuff up to snuff, if you know what I mean? Like,
we're continuing business as usual with laser focused on trying to provide the best quality public safety services to our community. And what we've been doing is treating people with dignity and respect and going about our business. For example, a traffic stop, we're not walking up to that traffic stop asking people to provide their immigration status. That's not how we conduct business here. We're not voluntarily sending information to various federal government agencies, alerting them where potential families may be, you know, residing here in the city. We're going to follow the law. Do not get me wrong. We will follow federal, state, and local law. But at the same time, we're doing business the Bethlehem way. And I'm very, very proud of that. I'm very proud of our officers, and I'm proud of the contacts that we have in the community, the dialogues that we've been having back and forth. They're hard conversations, but they're necessary conversations. And we're going to continue to have them.
So over or like preemptive compliance is just not the standard that Bethlehem PD does?
No, it is not our standard. Over compliance is not the standard. We're doing, believe me, we have our hands full, just abiding by what our main primary functions are when it comes to state and local law.
And the last question I had was, there was some conversation about detaining earlier. It was my understanding that we can't detain in Bethlehem, that even if we were detaining anyone for any reason, they're not here, they're at the county.
So that's usually something that Northampton County Prison or Lehigh County Prison would deal with. The detainers that come from ICE would be for a 48-hour hold. We don't hold people longer than, I'd say, 6 to 8 hours downstairs in our holding facilities. And even then, you know, we would hold somebody if there was a federal warrant or a court order, but a detainer, that's something that is much more common practice at the prisons in Northampton County or Lehigh County.
That's reiterated. We do use U visas that protect people, and like regardless of their immigration status, for reporting crimes, we are.
I just signed one last week. Yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right, if there's no other new business from council, we're going to move on to communications. Communication six.
February 10th, 2025 memorandum was an attached resolution jointly authored by Mayor J. William Reynolds and Emergency Management Coordinator Michael Wright to recommend adoption of Lehigh Valley 2024 Hazard Mitigation Plan Update. Adoption of the plan is prerequisite to receiving post-disaster hazard mitigation grant program funds.
Resolution 10A is on the agenda. Resolution or communication 6B.
February 3rd, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Health Director Kristen Wenrick requesting the destruction of records from the Health Bureau. Ms. Wenrick reviewed the Municipal Records Retention Act and the records listed on the exhibit accompanying the memo fall within categories where destruction is permitted.
The resolution will be placed on the March 4th Council Agenda, Resolution Communication 60.
The January 29, 2025 communication from Attorney Dennis Benner requesting to rezone one parcel and a portion of another at 8th Avenue and Martin Court from a CMU zoning district to a CS zoning district. The applicant seeks a zoning change in order to build an upscale car wash and or restaurant.
I'll accept the motion and a second to schedule a public hearing for April 1st to consider the requested zoning map amendment. So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? The clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. The motion passes 6-0. A public hearing will be scheduled on this matter. Communication 6F.
The February 12, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Director of Water and Sewer Resources, Edward Boscola. The memorandum seeks authorization to execute an agreement with Colliers Engineering and Design Incorporated of Allentown to provide professional GIS services to assist with web server and software upgrades and related duties. This is the third phase of a multi-step project to upgrade the city's GIS infrastructure. Cost is $41,440. And the work is to be completed by December 31st, 2025. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda. Communication 6G.
A February 12th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Director of Water and Sewer Resources, Edward Boscola, and City Solicitor, John F. Spurk, Jr. Memorandum seeks authorization to execute an agreement with Henley, Aranchik, Siegel, Pudlin, and Schiller of Philadelphia to provide representation and advice for matters involving environmental laws and regulations before the Pennsylvania DEP and the United States EPA for purposes of negotiating the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit renewal, compliance, and related enforcement matters. The cost is not to exceed $25,000 and the work is to be completed by December 31st, 2025. The agreement has three single-year renewal options for 2026 through 2028. At the same $25,000 annual cost.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6H.
A February 12, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Director of Water and Sewer Resources, Edward Boscola. The memorandum seeks authorization to execute an agreement with NTEC Engineering Incorporated of Reading to assist with startup programming, data management, and training for new water information management system programs for the water and wastewater treatment plants. Cost is $7,500 and the work is to be completed by December 31st, 2025. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10D is on the agenda. Communication 6F.
February 13th, 2025 memorandum from Councilwoman Kira Wilhelm, along with an exhibit and three proposal ordinances. Ms. Wilhelm recommends increasing the salaries of council members, the council president, the mayor, and the controller. The memorandum states that more than a decade has passed since any of the salaries were increased, as well as additional supporting rationale for a proposal.
Ordinances will be placed on the March 4th Council agenda for first reading on to reports. President's report. President Colon wanted to let Council know that he will be circulating a memo detailing our advertising theories and what happened with the ordinances today for you guys to understand, for all of us to understand. Turning to the Mayor for Mayor's reports.
No report, just administrative order number 2025-03. I hereby appoint Ronald J. Donchez, 915 Wofford Lane, Bethlehem, to the Bethel Authority. This appointment is effective through January 2030. It's a reappointment.
Administrative order to reappoint Ronald J. Donchez to the Bethlehem Authority. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. With that mayor reports, we'll go on to the committee chairs.
Thank you. The Community Development Committee will meet on Tuesday, March 4th, 2025 at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. There is one item on the agenda. Proposed amendments to Article 534 involving the Residential Permit Parking Program. Hillary Kwiatek, Chairperson, Community Development.
Finance Committee will meet on Monday, February 24th, 2025 at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. Potential salary increases for elected officials will be discussed.
Thank you. We have no new ordinances for final passage and no new ordinances. So moving on to resolutions. Resolution 10A.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Lehigh Valley 2024 Hazard Mitigation Plan is hereby adopted as the official hazard mitigation plan of the City of Bethlehem, and that the respective officials and agencies of the City of Bethlehem identify the implementation strategy of this plan are hereby directed to implement the recommended activities assigned to them. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leona and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Grimsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Ms. Leona?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10B.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Colliers Engineering and Design Incorporated to provide GIS field verification. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leona and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Grimsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Ms. Leona?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Hangley, Aranchet, Siegel, Pudlin, and Schiller to provide legal counsel associated with environmental regulatory matters. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leona and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion?
I have one question, Mr. Muscola, if you could come to the mic for a second. Probably guess what I'm going to ask, but depends on how much you've been paying attention to the news. It's my understanding that there was an executive order that impacted new regulations on things like PFAS, the new guidance and the things that we were just starting to kind of rev up, that they were stripping them away. Have you heard anything? When I saw this, I thought, oh, these might be the people you might ask about what's going on here. But it's that is something that I saw during my doom scrolling at some point last week. So do you have any information on that?
I've also heard talk of either a pause or rollback on recent regulations. I think the United States Congress has the authority or the ability to repeal regulations that were recently passed within a certain time frame of the previous administration. I'm not entirely sure of the entire legal landscape of it, but I don't think anything's been actually done yet. I don't think anything's official yet in terms of pause or a rollback of any regulation. So I think at this point it's just a lot of talk so far.
I would put in a word for us to go ahead, because of course we're perfectly welcome to have a more strict guideline, just not a less strict guideline, if I'm understanding it correctly.
For example, like lead services, we're still moving forward with the lead service identification and replacement plan. Nothing's changed, so that's still our intention. I think it's a good plan, regardless, right? Everybody wants to remove the lead from our water pipes, so that's the long-term goal, right? So nothing's changed in that regard.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Grimsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Ms. Leona?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with NTEC Engineering Incorporated to provide new water information management system programs for the water and wastewater treatment plants. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion. Clerk, call the roll.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10E.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolution, is hereby granted for 708 East 4th Street to install window graphics, all white, one measuring 18 inches in diameter, one measuring 12 inches by 40 inches. Each sign to be centered within the window frame. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion. Pardon, call the roll.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10F.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolution is hereby granted for 415 Long Street to install a new storm door, two glass panels in an existing wood door, and two wrought iron railings at the front porch. The lighting fixture at the front door is also proposed to be replaced. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10H.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolution, is hereby granted for 459 Main Street to remove and replace existing slate roof, install new OSB sheathing, install new Owens Corning duration shingles, and replace existing skylight. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Passes 6-0 and Resolution 10-I. So resolution 10. We're good. That was it.
Cool.
Awesome. Thanks for having that. Hanging out. Have a great night, everybody.